and he would have said, "You're a terrible daughter." And he would have cut this heel promo on his daughter. He would have walked out the front of the funeral home, and then he would have got hit by a bus.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Eight Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 485 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 5th, 2017. I am the Solid Monster, and that clip you heard there was from my exclusive interview with former WWE TNA and Ring of Honor writer and producer Dave Lagana. Had the chance to talk to Dave this week. Gotten a lot of positive feedback to the interview, as has Dave. You can tweet him at Lagana and let him know what you thought. He is very interactive on there. You are likely to get a response if you do tweet him. Here's a guy, you know, who worked for Vince McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, Paul Heyman, Dusty Rhodes, Dixie Carter, Eric Bischoff, Billy Corgan. Okay, he worked with all of these people. He's got some stories to tell, including what the original plan was for the Al Wilson funeral on SmackDown all those years ago, which you kind of heard there. I guess I kind of gave it away, but that was how Vince McMahon wanted it to end. It's just a very Vince thing, and it's a story he's never told before in an interview. So if you want to hear the whole thing, you can hear it there first. I also asked him about the old Tim White lunchtime suicide skits with Josh Matthews. There's a lot of fun stuff in this interview. You also get the perspective from an actual writer. I've not interviewed a writer before. I've interviewed, you know, former talents and photographers and, you know, authors and all that kind of stuff that are tied into wrestling. But I thought, you know, it'd be kind of interesting to be able to talk to somebody who's been on the inside of what the writing process is in all of the big companies, WWE, TNA, ROH, and kind of get that perspective. It's pretty fascinating stuff. So it's up as a Sound Off Extra on our YouTube channel. There is a link in the video description to download the MP3 if you would prefer to listen to it that way. I still had people asking me, oh, is there going to be audio to download? And I say it every single time. There's always a link in the video description to do a direct download of the MP3. So I would encourage everybody to go ahead and check that out. Also, my thanks to Zach of Wrestling With Ideas for having me on his show to talk about Fastlane this week on 107.9 CKDJ Radio in Ottawa. But before we get into Fastlane, and I know I did the predictions last week, I have a couple of amendments because, of course, they did add a few matches. I'm going to talk about that first, and then we'll get into all the news of the week. But first, I got to mention this, and this is exciting. Yeah, I mention Audible every single week and how Audible is offering listeners of this podcast a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day trial of the service. They are extending that offer. You can still take advantage if you have not already done so. Just go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. You go through the sign-up process. You will not be billed for those initial 30 days unless you continue the trial beyond that. But you get one free audiobook that you get to cash in on and keep no matter what, whether you stick with Audible or not. It's a pretty good deal. But what I was alerted to this week is that there is a certain book that is now available for pre-order. You can cash your free book in on this book if you want to, even though this book will not be out for another month. And that is the upcoming AJ Lee book. Or I guess AJ Mendez Brooks is the name she's going by now. But she has a new book coming out next month on April 4th, right after WrestleMania. It's called Crazy Is My Superpower, How I Triumphed by Breaking Bones, Breaking Hearts, and Breaking the Rules. There's, you know, supposedly some pretty interesting stuff in there. I know she gets into her history with bipolar disorder. Supposedly there's some stuff in there about her time in WWE and a certain head of talent relations who had some not so nice things to say about her. I think there's going to be a lot of really interesting stuff in this book. And the cool thing about this, not only can you use our link to cash in right now for free and pre-order the book, so when it comes out, it's all yours. Plus, you know, April 4th, it would fall in your 30-day trial window. Apparently, AJ, though, narrates the audiobook herself. Not all wrestlers do that. There are a lot of audiobooks on there that are narrated. You know, Daniel Bryan, for example, narrates his book. Hulk Hogan narrates his. And there's a few other ones. But apparently AJ is going to be narrating her book, all 8 hours plus of audio. And so if you want to get the AJ Lee book, you don't have to wait until April 4. Use our link right now. You can pre-order and get your free copy of the AJ Lee book. audibletrial.com/solomonster. I encourage everybody to go ahead and take advantage of that. It's a free audio book for you. You're supporting the podcast when you do so. And I have a feeling this book may cause some news when it drops. So audibletrial.com/solomonster. Get yourself the AJ Lee book before it comes out. Also, if you want to become a PayPal VIP, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. Make a $10 or more donation. You'll get yourself a wrestling nickname and a shout out here. Can't go on here without saying thank you to the people that help this podcast out immensely. John Loose Cannon Lopez. Of course, it wouldn't be a podcast without me mentioning his name. Deadpool James Herrera. Beast Mode Brock Joseph. Out of Control Cody Thomas. Luis Hercules Hernandez. Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo. Damn Straight Michael Dorsey. Bobby the Wizard Waldrop. Kind of a Big Deal Corey Blake. Ryan the Dagger McTaggart. True Grit Tim Goggin. Mass Grave Micah Harshaw. Alvin Chainsaw Siegerts. Raymond the Mountie Medina. The Australian Ass Kicker Anthony Patty. Velvet Revolver Robert Murray. The Prince of Pleasantville Enelio Crockett. Brian Kerosene Kinnerson. I haven't heard that name in a while. Anthony Gorilla Press Gonzalez, Scott the Stump Woodford, and I want to send good vibes to Scott. He's going through a rough time right now, so I want to say get well soon to him. The Westlake Wildman, St. Clair Isuka, who is celebrating a birthday today. Happy birthday, dude. He also runs a YouTube channel by the same name, so check it out. St. Clair, that's Saint, and then C-L-A-I-R. Isuka, I-S-U-K-A, definitely give that a look. Speaking of birthdays, Lord have mercy, Versy Jones, he turns 25 today. Yes, 25 was fun. 10 years ago. So, enjoy it, my friend. Thank you again to everybody who helps keep this machine going here. We are approaching WrestleMania weekend, I'm very excited, and maybe not so much for the WrestleMania card, but the cool thing about going to WrestleMania every year is that it's not really even about WrestleMania. I go down there with a bunch of buddies. It's an excuse to get away and go on vacation to a warmer climate, which I desperately need right now because I shit you not, I am sitting here doing this podcast right now in my apartment. It is, I believe, 19 degrees outside with a wind chill of 8, and there is no heat. So I do believe I see icicles forming at the end of my nose, and if in the middle of this podcast this week, all of a sudden you hear dead silence and I kind of go dead, that means I froze. I froze to death in the middle of the show. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to the Orlando trip. More than anything, I think I'm looking forward to meeting up with you guys. That's always a blast. We're going to have our meetup at a place called Tin Roof in Orlando. If you need all the details, the address and all that, I've put together a Facebook invitation. I know not everybody necessarily uses Facebook, but you can go click that link and go to the page. You should be able, even if you don't RSVP, which I encourage you all to do, you should be able to at least see all the information on there. If you have any questions, just email me or tweet me. I'll be more than happy to answer them. I had one person ask me, oh, is it, you know, kid-friendly? If we have the family with us, would they be allowed in? I don't see why not, and based on everything that I have, searched around and found, I probably should just call the place, but yes, you are allowed to bring kids in there. I don't believe that if you try to enter this place at, 11:30 in the morning on a Sunday, believe me, they're not going to turn you away. So everybody is welcome. Please, hopefully you can make it out. I want to see everybody there. Tin Roof Orlando, that's WrestleMania Sunday, April 2nd from 11:15 in the morning until 2:30 in the afternoon. That will be our official meetup. And final predictions here for WWE Fastlane. The pay-per-view is tonight from, again, I believe it's Milwaukee. I did my predictions last week. I'm going to run through them very quickly here just to refresh everyone's memory. I don't believe any of my predictions have changed. I'm sticking with what I said last week, but they did add two matches. One is Nia Jax against Sasha Banks. I'm going to go with Sasha Banks in that match. I know Nia pretty much demolished her the first time. That's why I can't see that happening again. I guess if they want to work Nia into this whole Fatal 4-Way scenario for WrestleMania, they have to keep her strong, and so maybe they'll do some sort of DQ or something, but I'm going to go with Sasha getting the win here. And then Rich Swann and Akira Tozawa team up to take on Noam Dar and Brian Kendrick. I'm going to go with Rich Swann and Tozawa. for no particular reason other than I think they're going to win. The rest of the card is pretty much still the same. I'm going with Neville in the Cruiserweight title match against Jack Gallagher. Anderson and Gallows will retain their tag team titles over Enzo and Big Cass, who I do think are going to get the belts, but not until WrestleMania. They did, in fact, add Samoa Joe and Sami Zayn, as I said they would. Anybody could probably see they were going to add that match. I'm going to go with the idea that they want to extend this thing out until WrestleMania, do the rematch there, and have Joe win. So on this show, I think there's going to be some sort of a schmoz, some sort of a non-finish that leads to the rematch at WrestleMania. Bayley and Charlotte for the Raw Women's Championship. You know, you guys have floated some smart scenarios to me about how they could get around taking the belt off Bayley by having Sasha get involved and protecting Charlotte's streak. And yeah, I mean, I can see it, but I'm sticking with my gut. I still think they're putting that belt back on Charlotte, and then maybe Bayley gets it back in Mania. So I think Charlotte becomes, what would this make this, a five-time women's champion? Five, six, seven, ten? I've lost track. We have Roman Reigns against Braun Strowman. I still say Roman Reigns is going to get the win, probably by DQ. He better not, you know, it better be by DQ if he wins at all. I think for him to just straight up beat Braun would be just the mother of all mistakes. And I hope they're smart enough to realize what they've got with this guy. Strowman's got some real momentum. They've protected him very well so far. I see no reason to derail that. I see no reason to deviate from that. So I think Roman gets the win, but by DQ, we'll talk more about Roman and The Undertaker and all that in a little bit. And then, of course, the main event, Kevin Owens and Goldberg for the Universal Championship. Again, sticking with my gut, I think Goldberg goes in there. I feel this way even stronger after what happened on Raw Monday night. I think he goes in, I think he wins the championship, and I think he goes on to defend against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. So those are my fast lane predictions in a nutshell. I gave a little more detail last week if you want to go back and listen to the original segment, but I am planning on having a Sound Off Extra review of the pay-per-view later tonight, early tomorrow morning. It should be up on YouTube, so now would be a great time between this and between the interview I did with Lagana, and you never know what else I may have planned. This would be a great time to go on YouTube and hit the subscribe button, subscribe to the Solomonster Sounds Off Extra channel on YouTube, because you never know what you're going to get on there. Okay, so there's a lot that happened this week. I want to lead off, now that all that's out of the way, I want to lead off with this, and this is a serious story. Tomoyaki Honma, which is a name that I'm familiar with, you may or may not be familiar with. He is one of the more popular performers for New Japan Pro Wrestling. He was seriously injured in a match on Friday. He was in a tag team match with Togi Makabe and Michael Elgin, who I'm sure many of you know who that is, against Jado, who I believe is one of the bookers along with Ghetto, but he also still wrestles. It was Jado, Toriano, and Tomohiro Ishii. Honma took a draping DDT from Jado, which is the same move we've seen Randy Orton use a million times, but his foot got caught on the ropes, and he landed badly. He landed very awkwardly right on his head. They stopped the match right away. Medics rushed in. They gave him oxygen. There's a picture somebody posted on Twitter. I didn't retweet it because I, you know, it's one of those things that I didn't know if it would be appropriate to do so. But there's a picture on Twitter of Honma laying in the ring. They have an ice pack under his neck because his neck was freakishly swollen from the impact. It looked nasty. Really nasty. And the scary part is that he was basically paralyzed from the neck down in that he just had no feeling in his lower extremities. He was communicating. He can, you know, move his head and blink his eyes and all that kind of stuff, but he wasn't moving otherwise. And so they had to remove the top ring rope to get him out of the ring. They carried him into an ambulance that was waiting off to the hospital. There has not been a lot of information released since then. As of last night, even the wrestlers apparently had not been told anything new other than he is communicating. He can move his head, but his arms and legs, not so much. I think the silence from New Japan on this is not a very encouraging sign at all. New Japan did say that he suffered a cervical spinal injury, which is very, very serious and very, very scary. Hopefully when the swelling subsides, he gets feeling back in his arms and legs. Sometimes that's what happens. It just takes a while. I hope that's the outcome here. If you're a wrestler, There's nothing scarier than that. Frankly, I'll be honest with you. I'm surprised these things don't happen more often when you see the kind of risks that guys take these days and all the high-flying moves and everything, that things don't go wrong more often. This was just a simple DDT. This wasn't even some sort of a high-risk move or anything like that. This was a DDT. And it just goes to show you, there really is no such thing as safe style in wrestling. People talk about, well, you know, the WWE style, and it's safer than other. There's no such thing as safe style in wrestling. When you get in the ring, you're in the danger zone. No matter what you do, it doesn't matter. So, best wishes to Honma. I hope he can recover from that. Oh, my God, there's a lot of things that happened this week. There's a lot of things that happened last night. But we'll start with TNA. Drew Galloway, Matt and Jeff Hardy, Mike Bennett and Maria Kanellis, and the former Knockouts champion Jade, what do they all have in common? They are all gone from Impact Wrestling. And that is the new name, by the way. The TNA initials are officially dead. They are now Impact Wrestling. I will still call them TNA because I can't help it. They'll always be TNA to me. But there's so much to go through here, and there will be some spoilers from this week's Impact taping, so if you do not like spoilers, I suggest you skip this part. I don't know what to tell you. I really just, there's no way around it. But here is where things stand. Jeff Jarrett, Dutch Mantel, Scott D'Amore are the core forces behind things right now in TNA, creatively anyway. I believe Jeremy Borash is also helping out on the creative end. Bruce Pritchard, he's back. As an on-air character, possibly as a mouthpiece for Bobby Lashley, possibly as an authority figure. I'm a little wishy-washy on exactly what his role is, but he is back. His podcast has done so well and has far more listeners than TNA has viewers, and I'm not even making that up, that they decided to make a play for him. They're like, hey, this guy's pretty popular right now, and he's been here before. He brings some value to the company. Let's bring back Bruce. And in return, I guess they're going to promote his podcast, even though it should be the other way around. I don't know that he necessarily needs them to promote him, but that is the agreement that they reached. And shout out to Conrad, who does a great job with that show as the co-host. I think he does a great job, and I think he deserves credit for basically giving Pritchard new life on television. I mean, he essentially, I know it takes two to tango, but he essentially helped this guy get another job here, so... shout out to Conrad. But Pritchard was brought in, around the time, trying to think back to when he was first in TNA. He came in around the time I think I started getting back into TNA. There was a period of time, believe it or not, I was watching the show on a weekly basis and actually enjoying it. I want to say it was around 2011, 2012 maybe. I think he was in charge of the creative direction there. So, for a good year, year and a half, I enjoyed the show, and he may not have any creative input this time around, but I have nothing against Pritchard being back in the fold. I think it's, if anything, it's probably a smart move. They recognize that this guy has an audience, and they want to tap into that, and so, good. I don't have a problem with that. Although, I guess it's new ownership now, but this is still the same company that got him in trouble with the IRS. The last time around, to the tune of 10 grand when he last worked for the company. So there is that, but again, it is new ownership, and maybe he had some assurances put into his contract this time that, hey, you know, let's make sure nothing like that happens again. What else here? Matt Morgan, there's a name you haven't heard in a while. Matt Morgan and Chris Masters were backstage doing photo shoots. They're on their way in. Just me personally, Matt Morgan does nothing for me. Chris Masters, on the other hand, he got pretty good after WWE let him go all those years ago. I don't think he ever really got a fair shake after that. I know he's kind of one of these also ran names from the past, but, we'll see. I mean, again, I don't think the guy got a fair shake. He did improve, and let's see what he can bring to the table. But Morgan, I don't know. I mean, Morgan had a shot in WWE. It didn't work out. He had a shot, multiple shots in TNA. Although I do remember one particularly awful match he had with Sting, and it just never worked out. And so I look at the guy and I say, okay, he's big. Apparently, I think he's gotten into bodybuilding, so now maybe he's jacked. And so beyond that, what else is there? I don't see it, personally. I guess maybe soon we will, but I don't really see that making a difference. Speaking of not making a difference, brings me to Alberto El Patron. He debuted at the tapings. He beat Bobby Lashley to win the TNA World title, but there was some controversy involved, and so the title has since been vacated. That it's, you know, it is such a TNA move. You know, let's bring in the WWE guy and put the belt on him. Although Ring of Honor pulled the same crap last night. I'll talk about that. But TNA, you know, look, they for years they've had this affinity to bring in these WWE guys thinking that it's going to change their fortunes. It never, ever happens. They've brought in names far bigger than Alberto. But, you know, to be fair here, they were originally going to put the title on Drew Galloway, who I guess, well, I guess Drew's also a former WWE guy, but Drew's another one, kind of like Masters, who I don't think got a fair, I know he didn't get a fair shake the first time around. He's actually gotten better. He's turned himself into a hot commodity on the indie scene. And so I'd have no problem if they want, and Galloway's still very young too. I think people forget. I don't remember offhand exactly how old he is. I think it's mid to late 20s. So, you know, Galloway is somebody, you know, putting your championship on him, you could try to build around somebody like that. And that was the plan. They were going to put the title on him. They were going to use him to, you know, really kind of tap into the European audience. And he was going to be the face for them. And according to PW Insider, they were, you know, this close to making a deal with Bully Ray when things fell through with Galloway. And I'll talk about why in a second. But they were then going to go with Bully Ray. And they were going to bring him in and have him beat Lashley for the world title. Yet again, former WWE guy, although Bully, you know, Bully spent a good amount of time in TNA. I guess I wouldn't necessarily look at Bully and say, oh, they're bringing in the WWE guy, because again, he actually had a run as champion in TNA. WWE never gave him the chance to have a run, and I like Bully Ray. I think when Bully Ray, I wasn't a fan of Aces and Eights, but I think when they were giving Bully Ray a shot, you know, he slimmed down, he got himself in better shape, and all of a sudden he got this main event push, and I thought he knocked it out of the park. I thought he did a great job with it. So I actually give TNA a lot of credit for that. But it fell through. Last minute, the deal fell through. Now, this is the same Bully Ray who went and then signed with Ring of Honor and debuted last night at Manhattan Mayhem. They had a Manhattan Mayhem show here in New York. He put Adam Cole, their champion, through a table. And so literally the day before the tapings, the day before the TNA tapings, they reached out to Del Rio and they said, hey, we want to make a deal to bring you in. And I'm sure he got some nice money for it. And so they brought him in. And coming from WWE, he's got a profile. He's got a name that people know. And so I guess they feel they need that right now. But I'll tell you right now, Alberto Del Rio will not mean shit to TNA. He's just not going to. The guy is not a difference maker. It doesn't mean he can't contribute, but, you know, to put him in a prime position right out of the gate and you know, make him one of your top guys, I don't see it making a lick of difference. Just like with Morgan and some of these other guys, I don't see it making any difference at all. So all this talk about how, well, these guys like Galloway and the Hardys are leaving TNA and they're freeing up all this money for TNA to go after some newer, younger talent. It's like, well, I'm looking at them making deals for guys like Bully Ray and Alberto, and I'm saying, really? Is that where the money is going? Is this going to change the fortunes of TNA? Of course not. Of course not. And by the way, on the Bully Ray ROH stuff, this is me personally. I still believe Adam Cole is going to WWE. Okay, and his contract is up in about a month or two. I think in a month or two, he's going to wind down with Ring of Honor. He's going to drop the championship before then. And I think he's on his way to WWE. And since he is the ROH champion, and he just got laid out by Bully Ray, I think you can kind of see the writing on the wall here where this may be going. I'm just saying. Bully Ray, as the Ring of Honor champion, is not as far-fetched, I think, as it would have sounded a week ago. At the very least, I think he'll challenge for it. But the idea of Bully, I'm just trying to visualize like Bully Ray, Bubba Ray Dudley as the Ring of Honor champion. If it happens, I'm not saying it will, but even the idea of it happening is such a departure from what Ring of Honor used to be. Like when I first started going to shows in 06 or whatever it was. I mean, Ring of Honor was a very different company than it is today. And it's striking, I think, when I think back to then and I think of it now and stuff like that. It is very, very striking how different the company is. LAX is another blast from the past. LAX is back in TNA with Homicide and Conan and a few new members. No Hernandez. Boy, he's fallen off the face of the earth, hasn't he? Jeremy Borash is now on the announced team, which is a plus. I like Borash. Unfortunately, that does not mean he displaced Josh Matthews. My understanding is that Josh is still on commentary, but now Josh Matthews is doing the Michael Cole heel shtick, heel announcer shtick from 2011. He even has a bunch of angry Twitter emojis that are now part of his entrance video, which I actually think is kind of funny. Obviously, here's the deal with Matthews. Obviously, he's going all the way now with this heel shtick. I don't believe for a second this was the plan when they put that original... Remember that original video on YouTube that I mocked, that everybody mocked, the world mocked all those weeks ago, where it was called My First Day, and it was a sit-down interview, and he was talking about when he first came to TNA. And I think back to that video and I just laugh, because when you hear people talk about, like, when they go from TNA to WWE, they always talk about, I knew one day I would end up here. Because let's be honest here, right? Even if WWE treats guys like dog shit, at the end of the day, guys dream about ending up in WWE because that's the big company and that's where they can make the most money and they can be in WrestleMania and all this kind of stuff. So that's normally how it goes. And I remember watching the video and Josh is, he did the exact opposite. He's talking about, how, I always knew one day I would end up here. And it's like, dude, it's like, really? Okay. I laughed at the comment just because you were in WWE, right, for God knows how many years. It was not his choice to leave. He got shit canned, and so he ended up in TNA because, you know, his buddy, Big John Gaborik over there, brought him in. It's like, I always knew one day I would end up here. Yeah, because you're terrible, and you knew that you had no long-term future in the other company. But it was in that video where he made the comment about how, I believe that, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, I'm the best announcer in the world. And just the way he said it in the context of the video, I don't believe for a second that this was a setup for a heel character. I think he said it. It was a stupid thing to say. It's okay to have confidence, but you had to know when you make a comment like that that you're going to get shit on. He did get shit on. And to his credit, I think that he took that, and now he's turned it into this whole thing where he's a Twitter troll, and now he's incorporating it into his character on the air. So that's how I think the evolution of this thing went down. I don't think this was the plan from day one. Oh, you got worked. You got, you know, you got worked into a shoot. Like, no. He made a dumb comment. He got called out on it. And now they've pivoted and they've turned it into a heel thing. As a lead play-by-play announcer, the guy is terrible. Let's just put that out there once and for all. Josh Matthews as a lead play-by-play guy is the exact opposite of being the best in the world. I'm far from the only person who feels this way, okay? And if you're going to continue to be the lead play-by-play guy, I think being the heel is a stupid move. It was stupid when WWE did it with Michael Cole, and it's stupid if the idea is that they're going to do the same thing now in TNA. Now, I say that because I'm not sure that Josh is now the play-by-play guy. I mean, they brought in Borash. My belief, then, is that Borash is essentially the main announcer. Josh has now become the color guy. I guess that means Pope is out of the picture. Pope De Niro over there. And if he's going to be the color guy, like in the Bobby Heenan or the Jesse Ventura role or the Jerry Lawler role, then that's fine. If he wants to play up the heel role, then that might be the best role for him because he is so hateable, with a face that is so punchable, that it might just work out for him. Okay, and I saw one thing where I guess Cody Rhodes was there, and he threw him at one point, so Josh took a bump, and the whole thing is nobody likes Josh, which is a shoot. So if that's the plan, then that's fine. As long as he's not the main play-by-play guy who people are supposed to believe in and buy into, and who's supposed to have some shred of credibility, the guy has no credibility. When you do a video like that, you make some of those comments, you have no credibility. But if he's in that, you know, Ventura Lawler role, then it's fine. Let him have his fun. But let's get a little bit deeper into what happened here with Galloway and the Hardys and some of these other folks. Now with Galloway, and Galloway has come out, he's put a statement out, he's explained his side of the story. It's no big secret. He wanted to stay. He would have stayed with TNA. He'd be their champion right now. They probably wouldn't even have Alberta if TNA would have gotten back in touch with him 3 weeks ago. But instead, they waited, they dragged their feet, no contract, and all of a sudden at the last minute, here's a contract. And he said it wasn't an easy decision to make because they made a very good money offer to him. I don't know if it was life-changing money or anything, but they made a very, very good financial offer to him, and he had to go back and forth and really debate, what do I want to do here? What's the best decision for me to make? But in the end, he had to say no. And why did he have to say no? Because of the way that TNA handled the whole situation. This is not a story that we haven't heard before. And so even with Dixie out of the picture, it's more of the same shit with this company. So they waited until the very last minute, and they lost somebody who I think could have been a real power player for them and that they wanted to build around. And that, I think, is the most egregious part of this whole thing with him and the Hardys. It's not even so much that at the end of the day they let these guys go. It's the fact that these are people, these are some of their top stars. And at least in the case of Galloway, this is, by all accounts, somebody they were going to put the title on and build around. This is not some Joe Schmo in the bottom of the pecking order. This is not some mid-card guy who, well, who gives a crap if, you know, if they stay or go. This is how they deal with top talent. This would be like WWE, you know, trying to renegotiate a deal with like AJ Styles or renegotiate a deal with, you know, Seth Rollins or Dean Ambrose and playing games and waiting until the very last minute. And then they leave and they go to New Japan or they go to Ring of Honor or they go somewhere else. Like, WWE would never do that. If anything, it's the opposite, where they're maybe overly aggressive, trying to get guys locked up into long-term deals long before they're done. And we've heard guys complain about that. Ryback, right? Remember him? They were on him for months and months and months and months and months about signing a new deal and putting the Intercontinental title on him out of nowhere. Why? Because they tried to, you know, butter him up, and in the end it didn't work. But in TNA, it's like the opposite. It's like they don't even think about it until it's too late. And by then, the guys leave and they go somewhere else. But how could you pull something like that with a guy like Galloway or somebody like Matt and Jeff Hardy? I just don't understand it. How do you conduct business that way? And this is a new regime. This is new ownership. These are new people in power, by and large. And it just feels like the same old story with this company. How does something like this happen? And again, similar story with the Hardys. They felt dissed by the way things were handled. Pro Wrestling Sheet has done a very good job of documenting this entire thing and getting the details about what happened. And they were also interested in coming back. In fact, they had verbally agreed to new terms with TNA back in December. They had said that we're going to stay, we want to stay. And at that point, it was a matter of putting pen to paper and getting the contract written up and sent to their lawyers and then signed, and it would have been a done deal. And those terms, I guess those terms, it was going to be a one-year deal. Like, they had everything ironed out. And TNA pulled the same stuff. Same stuff on them that they pulled with Galloway. And now we're in a situation where they're gone. Pro Wrestling Sheet says they have indeed opened discussions with WWE, and you knew that's where this was going. Things so far are supposedly looking good, even in spite, I'm going to say, in spite of what happened last night. Now, there is the potential issue of who owns the broken characters. Who owns these characters and likenesses from Matt Hardy's broken universe? There could be a legal fight there. Anthem claims that Matt came up with the characters while under contract to TNA, and so therefore, I guess it's their intellectual property. Matt argues otherwise. He says, not true. This is all mine. But again, just to go back to what I mentioned a little while ago, they had agreed verbally to stay with TNA. It was the best situation for them. They're making good money. They're not on the road full time. Matt, at least, has his entire family with him, his wife, his son. They're all on television. Senor Benjamin, who I think is Rebby's father, like it's a family affair. Like, it's a great situation for Matt. And so why would he want to give that up unless, you know, WWE just blows him away with an amazing financial offer? It was a good deal for them. I could see why they would want to stick around for another year. All right, the Young Bucks have been pulling this stuff. The Young Bucks have resisted going to WWE. It's not like there hasn't been interest there, but they just signed a two-year deal. You know, you sign a one-year deal, a two-year deal, you wait, and then you reevaluate, and then a year from now see, you know, what the landscape looks like. It's not stupid. It's not a dumb thing to do. But weeks went by and weeks went by and weeks went by and nothing. And Matt tried to follow up with them. He was proactive. He tried to follow up. What's the holdup here? And they kept giving him the runaround. They kept giving him the runaround. And their lawyer then turned around, told TNA, look, we want a creative control clause inserted into the contracts for these guys. And TNA balked. They shot that down. And then supposedly there was one source that even said that Ed Nordholm is the, he's the head of Anthem. And, you know, Matt and Jeff's lawyer said, well, look, you know, we've got some interest from other companies here. And supposedly Nordholm turned around very flippantly, and his response was, well, then just tell them to go to WWE. And that pissed off Jeff Hardy. So at that point, Jeff said, I'm not going back. Matt, at least, was still trying to make a deal. But when he finally got the contract from them in the last couple of weeks, it was a 2-year deal, which is not what they had agreed to. They had agreed to a 1-year deal. All of a sudden, a 1-year deal had turned into a 2-year deal. And in it was the stipulation that TNA would get 10% of all profits they made outside of Impact Wrestling, because the Hardys have been killing it on the indies. And so TNA wanted a cut of that money, which I guess they weren't getting before. And at that point, things broke down. And the Hardys, they agreed to do business. They agreed to show up at the tapings this week because they're the TNA Tag Team Champions. They agreed to show up. They agreed to drop the belts. And TNA said, no way. We're not putting you on television without a contract. And so they never did drop the belts. They sent the belts back, but they never dropped them. They never lost them. That is a hell of a way to treat two of your top stars. And again, it seems like the more things change, the more they stay the same with this company. Now, that being said, I'm actually going to defend TNA just a little bit. Just a little bit. As ridiculous as it is to let something like this happen, and the way, supposedly, you know, the way that this all went down, there is no excuse for it. You just don't do business that way, or you lose people. But that being said, okay, put that on the side here, there is something to be said for bringing in a new regime, you know, bringing in a new creative team with their own creative vision for the company, and not wanting to surrender creative control to guys. I mean, look, Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel and Scott D'Amore, they need to have a chance to put forth whatever plans they have and be given the chance to sink or swim. And if they're not fans of the Broken Union, and not everybody is, I mean, I think even my audience listening right now, or the people listening to this on YouTube or what have you, are listening to this and going, oh, I hate that. I hate Matt Hardy, Broken Matt Hardy. I think it's stupid. I don't get it. There's a, you know, it's a polarizing thing. Not everybody is a fan of it. I happen to like it because it's different and I find it entertaining. Now, would I want to watch an entire 2-hour show of that every week? Of course not. Am I going to feel the same way and love this gimmick 6 months from now the way I did 6 months before? Probably not. I don't know. I mean, things over time, they kind of get old after a while. But I love the hell out of it and I still enjoy it, and I would love to see them bring that over if they were allowed to WWE, but not everybody is a fan of that. It's very, very different than what people have come to expect, I think, from a pro wrestling show. And if these people like Jarrett and Mantel are not fans of that universe, or if they want to take the product in a more serious direction, which I imagine they probably do, and talking drones don't fit into that vision, then they deserve the chance to go with their own ideas and see what works. And either, you know, they'll succeed or they'll fail. I get that. I will actually defend them in that respect. If they are not fans of that, then I totally get it. They have to have the chance to do their own thing. Now, Matt was very diplomatic about things on Twitter. He was talking about how delightful his run was and how much respect he has for the locker room. His wife, on the other hand, she felt a bit different about how things went down. Before they sent those belts back to TNA, she actually tweeted out, she said, if MFers don't start coming correct, I'm not even sure what that means, I'm about to melt some gold and have me some new gold hoops. She went full-on gangsta on TNA. I would be more afraid of Rebby than I would be of Matt, to be perfectly honest with you. I would not want to get on her bad side. Now, there is a new wrinkle to the Hardys possibly going to WWE. So you could tell there's a lot of news this week, because I'm not even getting to this part until, 20 minutes in, 25 minutes in? There is a new wrinkle here. Last night at the Ring of Honor show, they had a show over at the Hammerstein Ballroom. The Young Bucks successfully defended their tag team titles against, it was Leo Rush and I forgot who his partner was, but anyway, they won. And after the match, the lights went out, and when they came back on, the Broken Hardys were standing in the ring, and they cut a promo on the Bucks, and they challenged them to an impromptu tag team title match right then and there. And they had a match, and the Hardys won. And so Broken Matt and Brother Nero are your new Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions. And after the match, Matt got on the mic. He claimed the Hardys have signed a deal to work for Ring of Honor. Now, that may well be true for this month. I don't doubt that there may have been a contract signed, or maybe it's a verbal agreement. I don't know. But I don't believe for a second that they have signed deals for any longer or agreed to a deal for any longer than through the WrestleMania weekend, Shana. They're going to have a match with the Young Bucks on April 1st. I think that's the day before WrestleMania. I think it's in Lakeland, Florida. I suspect, deal or no deal, they drop the belts back to the Bucks there, and that frees them up to go and do whatever they want. If they want to continue on with ROH, I'm sure ROH would love to have them, but I suspect that they are not going to ROH post this month. And I don't think that it changes a damn thing when it comes to WWE. I think they're talking to WWE. I think they end up in WWE. This, in my opinion, does not change anything. Because all I saw all night was people, wow, they signed with Ring of Honor. So much for WWE. It's like, hold on a second. Back the horse and buggy up a little bit here, okay? This doesn't mean anything. They need something to do over the next 4 weeks. They already had a match booked with the Bucks that they were building up for April 1st. And so why not, you know, stir things up a little bit, get some buzz going, and put the belts on them now and have them drop them to the Bucks before they leave? Makes sense to me. Makes sense to me. Now look, that doesn't mean that negotiations can't break down with WWE. Shit happens. Of course, they may end up not going there. But I believe that they are talking to them. I believe things are probably going well, and they are closer to a deal than not. And I don't see this messing that up. So let's not get ahead of ourselves and think, well, that's the end of the WWE talk. No, actually, it's not. I think that's just beginning. You know? And look, Ring of Honor is not paying them what WWE can pay. And I know it's not just about the money, but let's be honest here, okay? Ring of Honor is not paying them what WWE can pay them. Especially if they bring those characters in, just on merchandising alone. Are you kidding me? The amount of money these guys can make? You don't think that they're not thinking about that? Matt's a smart guy. You don't think that thought hasn't crossed their mind? WWE can do for them a hell of a lot more than Ring of Honor can. So I don't think this changes anything. These guys have been on an expedition for gold now for how many months, right? They've been winning tag team belts from different promotions left and right. All over the country. They were the TNA tag team champions. Now they have the ROH tag team titles. The only way this ends is with them challenging for the Raw titles or the SmackDown titles. I don't think anything that happened last night changes anything about that. Now, if the Hardys do go to WWE, what do I envision them doing? It's impossible to say because we don't know if they would come in with the broken characters or not, if they'll even be allowed to. Doing something with New Day at WrestleMania is something I pitched a few weeks ago, and it was funny because it might have been a mailbag question. I don't remember that somebody asked me when I pitched the idea of, well, you know, this is how I would introduce them, and I would have them come out and New Day is hosting WrestleMania, the Hardys make a surprise appearance, and you have this like face-to-face. You could do it on Raw the next night too, but I think doing it at WrestleMania would be more epic. And then it was like right after that all this stuff went down and we found out they left TNA. So I stick to that idea. I think it's a good idea. I think it would be good for the New Day because the New Day are just, you know, they're floating in the ocean with nowhere to go. I mean, what do you do with these guys? These guys have been around for so long. They had that long run as the tag team champions. They finally got the belts off of them. There's no added value by putting the belts back on them right now. So if they're not challenging for the titles, I mean, look, they're freaking hosting WrestleMania. They don't even have a match. That just goes to show you they don't have any ideas for these guys. If the Hardys come in, it breathes new life, I think, into the New Day. And I think you could definitely do stuff with them for a few months. So I do think that would make the most sense when they initially come in. I do think that Matt and Jeff right now, especially with those characters, are more valuable as a team than they are apart. And why not bring them in as a team? Because you can always break them up, you know? I'm not saying they turn on each other. I just mean, if after a while you want to take Jeff Hardy and you say, we really got to run with Jeff as a singles babyface on SmackDown, we really need him, then go ahead and do it. And Matt can go do his own thing. But you bring them in initially as a unit. You bring them in together as a team. I think that's where the real value is there. And that tag team division on Raw could use a real shot in the arm right now. It's not just the New Day. That division is dead. It is dead. Okay? They have Cass and Enzo. All of a sudden, Enzo now seems to be getting more boos than cheers. But they got Cass and Enzo. They got Cesaro and Sheamus. They have Anderson and Gallo. They have teams. But the division, there's nothing, there's no spark there. It's like there's still something missing. Even though they have four or five different teams, there's something missing. I think Raw could benefit a lot more than SmackDown from bringing these guys in. So we'll see if that happens. Maria and Mike Bennett, husband and wife, they were in TNA for, maybe a year. And they, back when all the Billy Corgan stuff was going on, they had publicly, like on social media, come out in favor of Billy. When Billy got ousted, when Billy got knocked out of the picture, I think even Maria, it might have been both of them, they went on Twitter and they made comments that were like, whoa, okay. So like politically, it seemed like they were on the wrong side of the fence. That probably should have been an indication then, but they decided that, you know, we're out of here. We're not going to stick around. The rumors suggest they may end up back in Ring of Honor, which is where they were before. I think they were part of the, was it the Kingdom they were part of? So yeah, they may end up back in ROH. ROH has, been picking up a number of names here over the last 24 hours or so. We'll see if they add two more to their roster. One good piece of news for TNA is that TNA is now back on Spike TV in the UK. There is a channel called Spike in the UK, and Ireland, and starting this spring, every Friday night, TNA will finally be back on television in that part of the world. Apparently, there are not very many shows on that station that have ever done more than 200,000 viewers, so I take it that this is not a very big station. So TNA is either going to bring new viewers to them, or they're going to have a very small audience going forward in the UK. But a small audience is better than no audience. Remember, they lost their TV deal. They had to get back on TV somehow. I'm sure this was not the ideal situation for them if this is such a small station. I'm sure people listening right now from the UK can write in and shed some more light on Spike over there. But they finally have a new UK home, which they desperately needed. So that is a good, positive piece of news for TNA. So let's move on from TNA. Let's talk about someone else who is leaving, although this person is leaving WWE, or maybe not. I don't know what's going on with him. Jack Swagger, he was on Chael Sonnen's podcast. He told him that he requested his release from WWE after more than a decade with the company, going back to his days in developmental. I remember when he was in developmental as Jake Hager, and then they changed it to Jack Swagger. But he says they were way off on a new contract, and WWE did not value him at what he thought he should have been valued at, and so it was time to go. And what is interesting is that he was almost immediately, within a day or two, WAW, which is a promotion over in the UK. It's actually the promotion that's run by Paige's family, by her parents. He was announced for an appearance. He was announced for a match in the promotion, ironically, against Alberto El Patron. But WWE has since publicly stated that he has not been released from his contract. He has not yet, anyway, been granted his release that he asked for. And even if he was, he would not be able to go anywhere for 90 days because he has the 90-day non-compete. So now it's a little weird because I know with some guys with the whole non-compete, it applies to promotions with television and maybe not indies, like. But I guess in this case, they're saying that even if they do grant it, it's going to be 90 days before he can really do anything. So I think that appearance was supposed to be this upcoming weekend. I take it that's no longer happening. Last I checked, he was still listed on WWE.com. So I guess as of right now, Jack Swagger has not been released from WWE. But it just seems like a formality at this point. Look, this company has done nothing with this guy. They moved him over from Raw to SmackDown. Remember after the brand split happened last summer, Jack Swagger showed up one day on SmackDown. He stood in the middle of the ring and he cut this promo. You don't know me. You don't forget everything you thought you knew about me. This is the new Jack Swagger. And then nothing. I don't even know. Did he even make an appearance after that? He might have made one. They did nothing with this guy. And I don't believe when you spend that long in WWE doing absolutely nothing, and you're treated as an afterthought, I don't believe that you can recover from that. I really don't. I don't think that you can really recover from that. Not unless you go away for a while. And I point to somebody like Drew Galloway as a great example. I don't know that he spent as much time there before he left as Swagger did, but he was there for a long, long time. He got a big push right out of the gate. And then things happened and, you know, he rubbed people the wrong way and he had some incidents with his wife at the time and that hurt him, unfortunately, and he was in the doghouse, you know, forever. I mean, he was perpetually in the doghouse. Then he ended up in 3MB, and he was a joke. They turned him into a joke. And then they got rid of him. And he has gone, and he has reinvented himself. He has tried to prove that he is, in fact, better than that. And I think he's done a very commendable job. And it may well earn him a job back into WWE. And I hope for his sake that if he does come back, they at least see the value in him and they don't just relegate him again to the undercard. Because again, you ask yourself, what does Vince McMahon really know about what Drew Galloway has been doing in ICW and in TNA and this traveling champion going all over the world from country to country? How up on that stuff is Vince himself? Because I'm sure people like Triple H and his right-hand men, they're aware of that. They probably have an interest in the guy. But, like, how do they communicate that to Vince? How up on all that is Vince? And at the end of the day, it only matters what he wants to do. So, like, I have this vision in my head of Drew Galloway coming back and walking in the front door in some arena, and then Vince sees him and shakes his hand. Oh, welcome back, you know? And then he ends up jobbing to Hornswoggle, and Hornswoggle isn't even in the company anymore. So, my point is that, and someone did an interview not too long ago. I talked about it here on the podcast. I can't remember who it was. I think it was somebody who had already left WWE. I can't remember who it was. But they were talking about how some guys are just content to hide in the back. And they don't want to make waves. They show up. They stay in catering. They do what they're told. But they try to just fade into the background because they're happy to have a job. They're happy to be called a WWE superstar. And, you know, some guys just don't want to do that. Some guys just don't want to settle for that. And you have a guy like Jack Swagger, who's been doing nothing but that now for a number of years. And at some point, you just say to yourself, look, I'm now 30, what is he, 34, 35 years old, and I'm better than this. And I don't want to just collect a paycheck and show up with a WWE logo next to my name. I'm better than this. I'm not having fun anymore. I want to go do something else, or I want to go do this somewhere else, even if it means that I'm taking less money. But guys now are finding that as they go out, especially if you've got a name from WWE, you can go out and make a pretty good living for yourself. It might not be WWE money, or it might be. Jack Swagger can't possibly be making, you know, that much money in WWE. And I look at a guy like that and I say, you know what? With as much demand as some of these guys are in for right now in the indies, and you can go to different countries and do these conventions and all this sort of thing, he may well end up doing better for himself by leaving and not being in WWE. So that just, you know, factors into your decision. And if he just stayed there, there's nothing that WWE can do right now, in my opinion, that can turn Jack Swagger into a winner. He has to go away and have success, and I mean go away for a number of years before he could potentially come back and then be someone. But if he just stays there, there is no amount of creative, there is no number of ideas they could possibly come up with for this guy that's going to amount to a hill of beans, because he has been so just destroyed. He has been so destroyed by just the lack of any sort of ideas and the booking and just his overall placement on the card. I could never, ever, unless he goes away and completely reinvents himself, take him seriously as anything more than a low-card job guy. And how many times have they done this to people, and then all of a sudden they start to get a push, and it doesn't work? It works for a week, and then they lose interest, or the people just don't buy into it. It's the self-fulfilling prophecy. We're not going to do shit with you, or we're going to beat you down, or we're going to bury you, or whatever. And all of a sudden, well, let's give this guy a shot. It's almost like they forgot he's employed. Oh, this guy works for us. Let's do something with him. And then when they don't get over and it doesn't work, well, we tried. This guy can't get over. Of course not. Of course he can't. Because look what you did to him. You never gave him a shot. So this is something that he has to do. Unless he's going to go do something else like MMA or something, if he wants to have a career in pro wrestling and in WWE, he's got to leave. That's what's kind of weird about it. To be successful in WWE, to have a shot at being successful in WWE, Jack Swagger must leave WWE. And it looks like he's on his way out. And you look back at his career, he was the ECW champion. He won the World Heavyweight title, cashed in Money in the Bank, and he had the belt for about 2 months. I remember him cashing in on Chris Jericho on SmackDown. I remember Jericho's shoe went flying when he gave him the Dr. Bomb or whatever it was. His shoe went flying into the crowd. I remember that. As a matter of fact, I think I was at the pay-per-view where Jack Swagger dropped the belt. I think he dropped it to Rey Mysterio. It might have been a four-way. In fact, I'm sure it was, because it was the only fatal four-way pay-per-view, thank God, they ever did. I had tickets to it. I think it was at the Nassau Coliseum, and I went. So I was actually at that show when he dropped the belt. But then he ended up, you know, forming this tag team with Cesaro. They became the Real Americans, and Zeb Coulter was managing them. And the pairing with Zeb Coulter, and it's interesting, you know, with Dutch now heading up creative for TNA, I'm thinking that may end up being his destination once he does get that release. Again, it may take 90 days, but he's got an ally there. He's got a friend there now in Dutch Mantel, who's heading up creative for TNA, and I'm sure Dutch knows how, you know, athletic he is, and he probably looks at him and goes, you know, we could do something with this guy. So don't be surprised at all if he ends up going to TNA and getting a push, because he's got some friends in power there. So I guess, but I guess we'll never get to see that ankle lock versus ankle lock match in WWE that all seven of you were clamoring to see between Jack Swagger and Kurt Angle. I guess we're not going to get that. Let's get to Raw. We probably should, because we're about an hour in here. Raw this past Monday night was live from Green Bay, Wisconsin. I got a bone to pick with you, Green Bay. Raw Twitter poll: the streak is over. 2,100, almost 2,200 votes. 30% thumbs up, 70% thumbs down. This was a show that I think I'm a bit kinder to, looking back on it all these days later, than I probably would have been had I talked about this, let's say, on Monday night or on Tuesday morning. But not by much. It had some good segments, but the show overall was a freaking bore. It just was. And you can throw, let me say this, you can throw all of the cruiserweight matches out there that you want to, but when you throw Akira Tozawa out there for, let me see here, let me bring this up. When you bring Akira Tozawa out there for just under 3 minutes, and Jack Gallagher in a tag team match with TJ Perkins that goes less than 2 minutes, and Big Show beating the Puerto Rican real estate guys in 2 minutes, and Sheamus beating Titus O'Neil in 20 seconds, which probably was actually for the better. When you litter a 3-hour show with matches like that, it's going to drag. Okay? That's just what's going to happen. That's not a way to get people excited about your show. And it didn't help that it looked like somebody pulled a fire alarm and 80% of the crowd ran for their lives. Green Bay was terrible. They should be banned for a year for getting another show. I've said I'm not in favor of banning moves. Maybe they need to start banning cities. They can start with Corpus Christi, and then they can throw Green Bay on the list. And by the way, I'm not discriminating here. If they go to New York, if they go to the Barclays Center, and the Barclays Center is like a funeral, then ban the Barclays Center. Maybe that's what they have to start doing to try to motivate some of these people. Either that, or maybe just put together a more exciting show, because it does go both ways. Goldberg. Goldberg opened the show. He cut a very simple promo. I'm going to hit the spear. I'm going to hit the jackhammer on Kevin Owens, and I'm going to win the Universal title. And he promised, he all but guaranteed to his wife and son that he would win the championship on Sunday. I mean, if that doesn't give away the finish tonight, then I don't know what does. Owens came out in a suit and tie. Obviously, he does not feel the same way that Goldberg does about their match at Fastlane. He proposed, why wait until Sunday? Let's have a Green Bay street fight right here and now. And then he changed his mind and said, you know what? Green Bay doesn't deserve to see me fight, which is true, by the way. Green Bay did not. Goldberg's promos are like his matches. They are short and to the point. Not like the usual, you know, blathering 20-minute opening promos that we get. I liked it. I thought that this served its purpose. They both did a fine job of communicating what they had to. Good stuff. New Day beat Rusev and Jinder Mahal, who argued in the ring after their loss. Rusev, by the way, posted a photo on Instagram of his new shorter haircut. He chopped off his long locks. It's like, dude, come on. You've got nothing going on TV right now. You're paired off with Jinder Mahal. At least pitch a hair match to creative. Just go, look, I'm thinking about cutting my hair. Can we do something with this? You know, it would have given them something to do with him. Maybe he did and they turned him down. I hope he did. It just seems like a given, especially for somebody who's got nothing going on. Then came the burial of Mick Foley. Not that we haven't seen Stephanie do this before, but she just keeps shoveling more and more dirt on the grave. Look, I'm sure this is all building to Foley's departure in a few weeks before Kurt Angle inevitably comes in, and you heard that here first how many months ago when I pitched that idea. So if they have a long-term direction with the Foley stuff, then so be it. But it's demoralizing to see this week after week after week with this guy. She put over her husband, Triple H, and said each year he gets stronger and stronger, and Mick Foley seems to get weaker and weaker. How far you have fallen, she said. She apologized to him for putting him in this position, not realizing how much he had truly fallen. You used to stand up to anyone, and now, she said, you can barely stand at all. Peter on Twitter, shout out to Peter. He asked me if he's crazy to think that all of this Stephanie Mick Foley stuff, besides Foley getting fired or resigning, might just be leading to Noelle Foley being the one to finally stand up to Stephanie and maybe using that as a way to introduce her to WWE television. I hadn't thought about that, but I don't think you're crazy at all. As a one-off, I could see not making her like a regular character, and God forbid she takes over as GM. Oh my God. I don't even want to think about that. But as a one-off, you know, I could see her standing up for her dad and then maybe getting slapped by Stephanie and that sending Mick off the deep end and he quits as the Raw GM. I could see something like that happening. The question is, you know, I've seen Noelle Foley on that Holy Foley show, the first five episodes I watched. I didn't watch the rest of it, but the question is she even capable of believably pulling something like that off? I mean, I look at her, she's a beautiful girl, but I look at her and she always looks like she's about to just bust out laughing every time I look at her. I mean, can she hold it together, like, acting-wise and pull off a serious segment like that? I don't know. I know she's been training to get in the ring, but doing a talking segment is very different. You know, if even some of her father's promo ability, you know, is buried in that DNA somewhere, then she might just be able to do it. Nia Jax and Charlotte against Bayley and Sasha Banks. Dana Brooke at one point was supposed to reach in and grab Bayley's foot as she was coming off the ropes, but she mistimed it. She couldn't even do that right. Then she got hot at somebody on Twitter who posted a clip of the botch. I don't even think they posted a comment. They just uploaded the video of the botch. And so she went off on them on Twitter, and in doing so, she botched the spelling of her tweet. She can't catch a break. Jackson Bailey tagged in at the same time. Bailey ran right into her, like running into a brick wall. Nia slammed Sasha onto Bailey and then pinned Bailey with a leg drop. Corey Graves, talk about this. He interviewed Seth Rollins in the ring. Rollins came out to I wrote alarmingly tepid reaction in all caps because that's what it was. An alarmingly tepid reaction from this wonderful crowd in Green Bay. Seth Rollins. Here's Seth Rollins, who's been out for weeks and weeks now with an injury, who was supposed to be one of the top baby faces on the entire brand. I mean, I guess with Goldberg and Roman Reigns at 1 and 2, Rollins would be the de facto number 3. And people just did not give a shit when he came out. Not only that, there were chants of CM Punk when he was talking. I blame The Rock. You see what you've done? I blame The Rock. But he, you know, he did his best to play it off like, I'm not going to be able to make it back in time for WrestleMania. It's not looking good. He was struggling. I mean, this promo here was a struggle. Until Triple H finally came out, he was gloating over Rollins' misfortune. Joe came out. I don't even know where he came from. He may have come out of the crowd from behind. So he was kind of like, Rollins was surrounded. Triple H was on one side of the ring on the apron cutting this promo. Joe was on the other side of the ring. And Rollins is on one crutch. He's got a brace on his injured knee. And Triple H says if Rollins knew what was best for him, he would not show up at WrestleMania. And he admitted that he used Rollins and he spit him out. He says, get over it. He used to call him the future, but now you're the past. You're washed up. And Rollins shot back and he vowed to be at WrestleMania. So Triple H saved this thing from being a total dud, but the whole thing, like, it just doesn't seem like a big deal to me. And I'm sure Rollins' injury, you know, him being off TV doesn't help. this just does not feel like a big deal to me. I'm sorry. And that reaction to Rollins was embarrassing. Big Show made short work of the Shining Travel Agents in a handicap match. Now, on his podcast this week, I didn't even know he had a podcast, but apparently Shaquille O'Neal has a podcast. It's called The Big Podcast with Shaq. He admitted that the planned match with him and Big Show at WrestleMania may not be happening after all. But he pulled a Snitsky. He claims, it's not my fault, and that's all you need to know. That's what Shaq says. Big Show doesn't buy it. Big Show thinks it's all Shaq's fault. He says that Shaq is fat and out of shape. He also spoke to Brian Fritz of the Sporting News. He says, you know, he's frustrated because his contract ends in February of next year. He's got a year left. And so this may well be his last chance to have a feature match at WrestleMania. And so he's pissed off. And look, I feel bad for the guy. I really do. I feel bad. He's been working his ass off in the gym. He's been putting in the work. And for this match not to happen, I'm sure that it would piss anybody off in his situation. And it's funny to me that Big Show now is going off on Shaq's weight, because as Big Show has gotten smaller, I think he claims he's down to like 379 now. So now he's like the medium Show. Shaq appears to have gotten fatter. I was going to say the same thing here before Big Show said it in an interview with ESPN. He says that Shaq is full of crap when he says, don't blame me. And he's right. Shaq appears to be getting fatter and fatter. So there may be something to that. The idea that maybe he just doesn't want to embarrass himself by going out there in tights or whatever. I'm sure he wouldn't be wearing tights. What did he wear last? I think last year he wore like a tank top when he came out in the Andre Battle Royal, whatever it is. But maybe he just doesn't want to be bothered. He can't be bothered by training and putting in the work. Because look, it's a cosmetic thing. It's not a real athletic competition that these guys are going in there and having. They're not having a shoot fight. Okay. And by the way, that's a good question to ask. Who do you think would win in a shoot fight between Big Show and Shaq? Be curious to know your answer on that. But anyway, so this thing is in limbo. It may happen, but it's not looking too good right now. And if that's the case, then I guess all of this training was for Big Show for nothing. But then again, it wasn't really for nothing. Let's be honest here. For his health and well-being, I'm sure Big Show could have stood to lose, 50 pounds or 100 pounds or whatever he was at before. So in a way, he should be thanking Shaq, because it was the idea of this match that he agreed to that got him motivated to get himself into shape. And Shaq sees this, and Shaq says, well, mission accomplished. I got Big Show into good shape. It's almost like Shaq is the reverse DDP. So maybe Big Show ought to be thanking him. Beth Phoenix was announced as this year's token female inductee for the WWE Hall of Fame, making her and Edge the first husband and wife combo to ever be inducted into the Hall of Fame. I would think that Vicky Guerrero is going to make it in at some point, and so that would be number two, since Eddie is already in. She spent 6 years in WWE. Dave Lagana, in the interview that I just did with him this week, talked about Beth first trying out for WWE way back in 2002, and Johnny Ace just not having any interest in her. There were two other women trying out, Gail Kim and Tracy Brooks, who went on to work for TNA. Johnny Ace liked the other two, but he had no interest in Beth whatsoever. But on her own dime, as Dave tells the story, she went to Ohio Valley to get better and to learn, and years later she ended up earning herself a contract. And she was, at first she was the psychotic stalker of Mickie James, which didn't last very long. Obviously, her run as the Glamazon, that's what she's most remembered for, that and the Glamorella stuff she did with Santino. She's one of only three women to enter the Royal Rumble match. Chyna and Karma are the other two. She won the women's title a whole bunch of times, but I mean, that doesn't really mean anything when it comes to this Hall of Fame stuff. Yeah, look, it's fine. I there's plenty of other women who should be recognized. Elizabeth, Sable. I'm kind of surprised that that one hasn't happened, actually, because, Sable's got the in with Brock. But Sable and Chyna both, I don't think some people who maybe weren't fans during that period or weren't even alive during that period who were listening to this, I mean, I don't think everybody really truly understands how big those two were as stars during the Attitude Era when wrestling was at its peak, and they ushered in the Playboy era of WWE women going into Playboy and being on the cover. Chyna and Sable were big stars. And the idea that they don't somehow deserve to be in the Hall of Fame or is comical, because of course they do. because they were a huge part of the company and the business that company was doing during that era. But with China, you know, my guess with China is she's going to go in. They feel that, well, if we put her in now, it just looks like we're being reactionary. She died, and so it looks like that's the only reason we're putting her in. And so they'll wait a year or two, and then they'll put together this glowing China tribute for her, because that's what they do. They did the same crap with Randy Savage. He died in 2011. They waited a few years, and then they put him in. A guy who Vince McMahon banished the mention of his name for so many years. All of a sudden, all these glowing Macho Man tributes. I mean, thank God we got that at least, but I'll never forgive him for not putting him in the Hall of Fame when he was still alive. But this is what they do. So China will go in. It may take a couple more years, but she'll go in. And hopefully other women too, like Elizabeth and others will get the recognition that they deserve. But I'm not going to sit here and say, well, you know, Beth Phoenix doesn't deserve it. Beth Phoenix deserves it as much as anybody else does, because she worked for the company and she had some success and she made an impact. And so there you go. I mean, we don't have this written set of criteria to go by here. I mean, WWE just put this new book out. I haven't read it yet, but it's like the book of rules, and I assume it's all tongue-in-cheek, and it's like, there it is. Like, that's what it's all about. The whole thing is tongue-in-cheek. There are no rules. The rules exist in one man's head, and he's out of his mind. You know what I mean? Like, what criteria are you basing this on here? You're basing this on a criteria that does not exist. So who are you, or who am I to say that Beth Phoenix doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? Look, I have my own thoughts in my head about guys. If you ask me, would you put Coco Beware in the Hall of Fame? My answer is no. But that's my idea of what the Hall of Fame should be. But at the end of the day, it's the WWE Hall of Fame. And if they want to honor Coco Beware, okay, fine. Honor Coco Beware. He was a character, right? He's a character I remember from my childhood. They should have put Frankie in. Put Frankie in while you're at it. Let's have a wing of the Hall of Fame for all the animals. I think Frankie should go in. I think Matilda should go in. I think Damien should go in. I mean, let's go all the way with this. They should have a jobber wing with Iron Mike Sharp and all these other guys, and they should have an animal wing of the Hall of Fame. So, but back to Beth. I don't know how I got off on that. But Beth was one of the featured women in that Divas division during that era. She was one of the ones who could really work. There were a lot of women who came through that division in the mid to late 2000s who could not wrestle. Beth was not one of them. I say congratulations. I'm thinking, and this is just me, that it probably would have been Mickey James going into the Hall of Fame this year once she left TNA and she was a free agent, essentially. Had she not reached a deal to come back full-time after she had that match with Asuka at TakeOver, I think they would have put her in the Hall of Fame. I think she would have been this year's female inductee, but it would be weird to put her in the Hall of Fame when she's still wrestling full-time on the main roster, and so instead it went to Beth. Again, just my theory. Cesaro and Samoa Joe, they had a nice match. One of the highlights of this show, in fact. Joe pinned him clean with a Uranage. So, yeah, still no muscle buster. But again, I don't think that means the muscle buster is banned. If anything, maybe they're phasing it down. But I think soon enough he'll bust it out in a match. Bust it out. I didn't say, oh, God, I have to clarify. Sometimes when I say things like, people misconstrue it. They're like, did he say bust a nut? Like, no, we don't need to see Samoa Joe busting a nut in any match. Busting out the move. What a visual that is. My God. Oh my God. Yeah, it's funny. I posted a picture on Twitter last night. I was, all this news was going on with the Ring of Honor stuff and everything else. So I was still getting my notes together. I just wanted to have some semblance, some order at least, of all the bullets of what I wanted to talk about. And then I was going through mailbag questions, and this stuff takes time. So my Saturday night, as most of them are now, is just spent doing nothing but prep for the show the next day. And I tweeted a picture out of me, and I don't do this every week. People think I'm an alcoholic, but I just was like, you know what? I'm in the mood for a Jack and Coke, and I happen to have some Jack in the liquor cabinet left, and I went out and I got a can of Coke, because I don't drink Coke anymore, because that stuff is just terrible for you. So I had my my Jack and Coke sitting here, and I just tweeted a picture out of it, and I just thought of it now, because I don't want people thinking, is he still drinking Jack and Coke the next day? Like, is he on a bender? Did this extend into Sunday morning? It did not. I promise you it did not. After the match, let's get away from this. After the match, Sami Zayn attacked Joe, including a dive off the stage, a whole 4 or 5 feet in the air. Yeah. See, diving off the stage sounds a lot more impressive than it used to be. It used to be a lot more impressive than that. And as expected, as I predicted, and everybody could have predicted, they did add this match to the card tonight. I've already talked about my predictions. The show ended with a contract signing for the match at Fastlane between Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman. Even though the match was made weeks ago, Foley said, "We're having a contract signing now because Braun is concerned that Roman might back out of the match." Okay, I don't think there's a single person watching on TV who believes that, but okay. Strowman yelled at Foley, called him pathetic. Everybody's just piling on Mick Foley. The Rodney Dangerfield of WWE. Roman Reigns came out. He brawled with Braun. They ended up in the crowd. Reigns speared him back to ringside through the barricade. Ended up, poor security guard got caught in the crossfire. He took a bump. Roman, I will say, got a pretty good reaction for all this. His best reaction in a while. He went to go sign the contract, but Braun on the outside just got back up. He came back to life like a movie monster. And came back in, Roman was setting him up, ooh-ah, and he gave him the spear, but Strowman caught him, and he threw Roman so hard into the corner that the top rope magically snapped, and it whiplashed him backwards. And, you know, I always thought that that would happen one day to Bret Hart, with all those chest-first bumps he used to take into the corner. So that was cool. It was a cool little effect they came up with there. Strowman left. Reigns is in the ring. He is struggling. He is pulling himself up. Believe it or not, there was a table in the ring and it didn't break. So he's using the table to pull himself back up so he could sign that contract because he is the fighting, valiant babyface. And he signs the contract. This was a good segment. They ended on a high note. Now we wait and see what they do tonight. Does The Undertaker show up? That's, you know, The Undertaker is rumored for Raw this Monday night. He's on his way back. And so the question is he on Raw, or does he make a surprise appearance at the pay-per-view tonight to have some kind of role in the finish of this match? We'll see. SmackDown Live, the SmackDown poll. Boy, talk about the tale of two different shows. This poll, over 24, almost 2,500 votes, so more votes than Raw, I think, which doesn't happen very often. A resounding 92% thumbs up, only 8% thumbs down. That's pretty impressive. And ladies, stay safe. Tom Phillips, still at the announce desk. Miz, cut a hell of a promo on John Cena on Miz TV. They opened the show with that. He was talking about how John Cena beat him at WrestleMania all those years ago. Or actually, he beat John Cena at WrestleMania. And Miz was the WWE champion. He was on top of the world. And then the very next month, Cena took it all away from him. And all these years later, he's the one doing media and movies and all sorts of things for the company. And here's John Cena, the ultimate hypocrite, talking smack about The Rock selling out to Hollywood. And now he's doing the exact same thing, going away for months at a time. He's the one, Miz is, busting his ass for the company. And yet John Cena is gifted a championship match at the Royal Rumble. He says, "I threw you out of that battle royal because I wanted you to feel what I feel." And John Cena spent the duration of this promo making funny faces, which I think, aside from all the spot calling that he does, is the single most infuriating thing to me about John Cena. He does this all the time. Somebody cuts a promo on him, and instead of taking it seriously, he turns it into a joke, and he makes faces like an insecure little brat. And I'll tell you what else was really stupid. Miz talked about Cena pulling strings behind the scenes to get what he wants, and John Cena, it's now time for him to rebut. And John Cena goes, "If I really was pulling strings, I wouldn't be standing here with you right now. I'd be in the ring with The Undertaker." And this led to yes chants and huge applause from the crowd. That was so dumb. So incredibly dumb if they're not doing that match to even bring it up. Because, of course, that's the match people want to see more. You don't promise something unless you can deliver on it. And to think about this. The original plan for WrestleMania this year was, in fact, John Cena versus The Undertaker. And then Vince McMahon allegedly changed his mind. The other plan for Cena, when Vince changed his mind about The Undertaker match, and this, I believe, is according to something that was said on Wrestling Observer Live, the other plan for Cena was John Cena against Samoa Joe. So we went from John Cena against The Undertaker to John Cena against Samoa Joe to John Cena and Nikki Bella against The Miz and Maryse. And as much as I've been enjoying The Miz for the last 6 months, it's like, wow. When you look at it like that, wow. Talk about door number one being a new car, door number two being a trip to Hawaii, and door number three being a gift card to Applebee's. We got the gift card to Applebee's for WrestleMania this year. So Cena then proceeds to bury the guy 6 feet under because everything he was saying was 100% true. He talks about how Miz cut his last name short to resemble The Rock, how he took Ric Flair's figure four, how he uses Daniel Bryan's kicks, all true. Miz is like a weird amalgamation of all these different guys all rolled up into one. Cena said Miz is, he's just a dude dressed up as a dude playing another dude. And Cena told Miz, you're not The Undertaker. But if you keep on pressing me, you're going to be a dead man. And so Maryse could take no more of this. Maryse got up and seen his face. She called him an egomaniac. She claimed that guys with big egos have tiny dicks. She didn't use those exact words, but that's effectively what she was saying. And for the record, I don't have a big ego. Then she slapped him. And I could tell you, Stephanie won't be happy about that. That brought out Stone Cold Nikki Bella. She comes out. Miz and Maryse bail through the crowd. Nikki gets on the mic. She tells Maryse, if you lay your hands on my man again, I'm going to break you, bitch. You hear me? That was good. That was a good line. So she and Cena kissed in the middle of the ring. He's obviously proposing to her at WrestleMania. I'm sure that's how this whole thing ends. It really is the only outcome for this thing that I think makes sense. You know that in the next few weeks, it's going to come up. Because Natalya brought the same thing up on TV. I'm sure Maryse will too. How Cena will never marry you. You're never going to have kids. All of this stuff. So you'll see. The minute they start mentioning that on TV, that's a dead giveaway right there of how this thing is ending. Becky Lynch beat Mickey James in a 2 out of 3 falls match. Mickey won the first fall. Becky the next two. Alexa Bliss marched down to the ring at the very end when Becky had Mickey pinned. So she distracted the referee, got up on the apron. Becky got up in Alexa's face. Mickey came up from behind, but Becky moved. So Alexa got knocked off the apron by Mickey James. And Becky got the disarmer, and Mickey tapped out. Apparently, Becky Lynch was spotted on camera at the UFC show last night. I guess her boyfriend is a fighter. I didn't know that. They put AJ Styles and Luke Harper on in the middle of the show, I guess because they wanted to end with the Orton turn. They had a good match. I think this was the very first singles match ever between AJ Styles and Luke Harper. Styles hit the phenomenal forearm. He got the pin. But Luke Harper had his foot on the bottom rope. The referee didn't see it. But AJ got the win. So as he's leaving, cue Shane McMahon. He comes out. He has the match restarted. So AJ gets knocked outside. He's arguing with Shane. Harper throws a kick, but he hits Shane by accident. Styles gets Luke back in the ring. He delivers a springboard 450 for yet another pinfall. And that I didn't see coming. I was waiting for the kick out. It never came. He got the clean pin. He pinned Luke Harper twice on this show. And I no longer have the same kind of optimism that some of you guys do that Harper's going to find his way into that championship match at WrestleMania. That's over. That's done. This was the death blow right there as far as that goes. I mean, what rationale is left? I mean, I know I was arguing for this a week or two ago, but that was then. This is now. There's no longer any rationale to have Luke Harper in that match at WrestleMania. He doesn't deserve to be in the championship match. That's what the Battle Royal was for. He didn't win. That's what this match was for. He lost twice. So that's it. And it's too bad because I think it would have made for a great match. I'm not normally a fan of doing triple threat title matches in the main event of Mania, but it's not like I expect this match to go on last anyway, so they could have done it. And it appears that that is not the plan. I did not expect AJ Styles to win, let alone that decisively. That surprised me. But I also wasn't fooled, and you shouldn't be either. When this was over, don't be fooled into thinking that he's actually going to the main event of WrestleMania. He's not. He's wrestling Shane. And we'll believe me, by this week, it will become very clear what they're doing with AJ Styles at WrestleMania. This Wednesday, by the way, I forgot to mention this before, John Cena and Nikki Bella will be teaming on TV for the very first time. So they're not saving the first time for WrestleMania. They're going to wrestle together for the very first time this week on SmackDown against Carmella and James Ellsworth. That's going to be a hell of a match. Could be match of the year when this year is over. I'm just being facetious now. Dolph Ziggler pinned Apollo Crews in the dreaded chairs match. Ooh, you know, the only match more intimidating than the chairs match is the epic stairs match. We had a chairs match here, and Dolph won after crotching Apollo on the chair. This sucked. This entire feud sucks. They should have a This Sucks match next. Both of them would win. It was then time for Bray Wyatt's invocation, which involved him speaking for about 5 minutes, until Randy Orton popped up on the Titantron, and he was in the Wyatt family shed that they've used in some of those old vignettes with the rocking chair, which was rocking, by the way, even without anybody in it, which is kind of creepy. They played some cheesy, spooky music in the background, like the stuff they used for those awful Kane monologues back in the day. Orton said, "This is Bray's world, but it's not mine." And everybody cheered because they realized the jig is up. Orton has betrayed Bray Wyatt, which has been 6 months in the making, going all the way back to before Backlash in September when Orton cut that promo about the rabbit and the snake. Now that's long-term storytelling right there. Okay, I applaud them for taking their time to pay this thing off. Now, what I was not completely thrilled with was the way that they did it. Okay, I more on that in a second. Let me finish this first. So I mentioned the rabbit and the snake. That was a promo on SmackDown that Orton did back in September. He flat out talked about being patient in that promo. This was 6 months ago. He was a patient man. Orton said Sister Abigail was laid to rest beneath my feet, and they showed there was like a grave beneath where he was standing in the middle of the shed. He pulled out a pickaxe. He threatened to destroy her rotting corpse, but instead he opted to douse the shed with cocaine and set it on fire. And this entire time in the arena, Wyatt was just losing his mind. He was crying. He was begging Orton not to do this. And Orton told him, "I'll see you at WrestleMania." And then he went outside, he lit the match, and he set the shed ablaze. And to make it even more over the top, he did his douche pose in the background while the shed burned. I think for that image alone, this entire segment was worth it. But anyway, here's what I didn't like about this. I actually thought it was well done, and you know, the Sister Abigail thing, obviously very important to Bray Wyatt, and we saw Bray at his most vulnerable here. There's some good storytelling here. But what I didn't like about it, I didn't like the way that he just showed up on the Tron and turned on Bray. I mean, that was a moment I think that should have been saved for in the ring. Either an in-ring segment on SmackDown in front of a live crowd or at WrestleMania. It just, for as long as they took their time to pay this thing off, for them to just sort of throw it out there like that, like before he set the shed on fire, the way they did the actual like reveal, it just felt like it came out of nowhere and you weren't prepared for it. The other thing that makes no sense is the timing of this. So it was only 2 weeks ago that Orton told Bray, "I won't fight my family," and he basically surrendered his championship match at WrestleMania. If his entire plan was to screw Bray, then why wait 2 weeks and then say, "See you at WrestleMania," right? Because now, instead of getting the title shot that he earned by winning the Royal Rumble, he's got to go through AJ Styles. They have made that match official for SmackDown this Tuesday for the first time ever. It will be Randy Orton one-on-one against AJ Styles. And the winner, for real this time, we promise, we swear, is going to meet Bray Wyatt in the main event of WrestleMania. It makes little sense for him to have waited until now to do the big reveal. Obviously, they had time to kill between the Chamber and WrestleMania. They wanted to drag this stuff out a little bit more, but I mean, in the context of the storyline, why would Orton surrender his title shot and then let them have a battle royal to determine the new challenger? You know what I mean? Like, that kind of left me scratching my head. But out of this, we are getting Orton and Styles. And by the way, even what I said just now about maybe waiting until WrestleMania, I guess that doesn't make sense either because Orton would have already surrendered the shot. So really, what would have made sense was right after Elimination Chamber, that first SmackDown, on that show, you do the big reveal. That's why waiting the extra week or two to meet just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But out of this, we are getting Orton and Styles. I'm hyped for it because I think it'll be a great match. I do wish they would save that phenomenal forearm into the RKO finish for a big pay-per-view match, but actually, it was Jose on Twitter made a great point. he thought it was very suspicious how AJ beat Luke Harper with the Springboard 450, which I don't know that we've ever seen him win a match with it before. Maybe he did early in his run. And he theorizes that maybe the reason for that was to make people think he could win with that move, so that when he goes to hit Orton with it on TV this week, Randy turns that into an RKO. And that really, I mean, that would be an even more spectacular finish than the forearm would be, and I could totally see it happening. Whatever happens, it's patently obvious that this will set the stage for some kind of showdown at WrestleMania between AJ Styles and Shane McMahon. And I'm visualizing this in my head, and I'm seeing Randy Orton maybe with the big spectacular RKO counter finish beating AJ to solidify his championship match at WrestleMania. And maybe Shane is out there for some reason, or, you know, maybe he's out there to watch the match or something. And as AJ recovers, the music kind of, they turn the music down and AJ's in the ring. He just had this great match with Randy Orton, but now he's out of the main event of WrestleMania, even though he does deserve to be there. And he gets up and he just goes after Shane. He beats the crap out of Shane McMahon. And they end the show with him just laying out Shane. But like a really vicious attack where he just snaps because this guy has legit been screwed. He's like the modern day SmackDown version of Bret Hart in 1997. Because I don't see how you can see anything that's happened in the last few weeks and not have sympathy for this guy. And I don't know if that's by design or not. I'm looking at this and I'm going, Shane is the heel and AJ is the babyface as far as I'm concerned. But that's how I see it going down, and I think that's how you end SmackDown. Orton gets the big win, Shane gets his ass beaten, AJ snaps, and that sets things up for WrestleMania.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT this week, Patrick Clark got a win over Sean Maluta of the Cruiserweight Classic, if you remember him. So Clark plays this effeminate gimmick. I can't help but think of Orlando Jordan whenever I look at him. I don't think that's a good thing. He won with a Famouser. You know, he's competent enough. We'll see where he can go with this. I mean, obviously you know my thoughts on the Drifter, and here's Patrick Clark doing a completely different kind of gimmick. We'll see if he can win me over. Asuka beat Peyton Royce to retain her women's championship. Peyton Royce worked over Asuka's shoulder. Asuka sold. But it was to no avail. Asuka lock for the tap out and the win. Billie Kay attacked after the match, which led to the double team, which led to Ember Moon making the save and having a stare down with the champion. So it's like I said months ago, all roads lead to Ember Moon and Asuka take over, and I think the streak is coming to an end. I think we're finally getting a new champion. And it's also worth noting that Asuka is scheduled for a bunch of main roster live events this month, which I think may be a sign of things to come. Me personally, I would send her to Raw. I think the women's division on SmackDown, even with Naomi out hurt right now, is in better shape than the division on Raw. But I think Raw could really use her right now because, you know, I had this conversation with Zach on his Wrestling with Ideas show last week. If Sasha does turn sometime soon, and it seems like we're kind of going in that direction, the babyface side of the Raw women's roster is basically Bayley, and that's it. That's it. I mean, so they're going to need another babyface or two, and Asuka would fit that bill. That's why I think it would make more sense for her to go there. Bobby Roode will defend the NXT Championship in 2 weeks against Cassius Ohno. So not bad. He hasn't even wrestled a match yet, and he's already getting an NXT title shot. We got a video package for my boy Wolfgang. I assume that means he's debuting on TV this week. At least I hope he is. We've already seen Tyler Bate, Trent Seven, Mark Andrews, and Pete Dunne. So I see no reason why we can't see Wolfgang on TV. DIY and the Authors of Pain for the NXT Tag Team Championship. Match was okay. DIY got the double submission locked in when the Revival ran in for the DQ. Shatter Machine to Tommaso Ciampa. They also laid out the champs. They gave Akam. I think it was Akam, right? I think it was Akam. They gave him a Shatter Machine too. So we are clearly headed for a three-way at TakeOver. So, I mean, what's the show looking like so far? We have Roode against Nakamura. It's got to be Roode and Nakamura, right, for the championship. Maybe a three-way if you throw Cassius Ohno in there. Asuka and Ember Moon, probably for the women's title. And the three-way for the tag team titles. It's not bad. It's not a bad card. I think you throw in a United Kingdom Championship match and I'm sold. You know, hey, Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne for the UK title. Put that on the card. Sold. Well, I mean, I already have my ticket for the show, so, I mean, technically I'm already sold. Let's get to your questions as we trudge along here. Long show this week. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Donnie, this is not a question, but I wanted to mention this here. Says, WWE has uploaded new matches to its Hidden Gems collection on the network. One of the matches is supposedly the only known footage of Ric Flair versus Buddy Rogers from 1979. It's only 5 minutes long, but those 5 minutes are better than anything else you'll find week to week on WWE television. It's worth a look if you have the time. So that is from Donnie. I shall check that out, Donnie. Anthony from Philly. Since Matt and Jeff Hardy are no longer with TNA, is it possible they will come to NXT? Because that is the only place I can see Matt's broken universe succeeding. Well, I got this question before the ROH stuff that went down last night. Although, as I said earlier, I don't think that changes anything as far as them talking and probably ending up in WWE in the next month or so. Look, I mean, if Vince McMahon's big idea is to bring these guys back just as Matt and Jeff Hardy for like a big reunion tour, Or use them the way they did with the Dudley Boys, just to lose and put everybody else over. All of their other teams that aren't over already, to put them over. Well, Kaz and Enzo are over, but I'm thinking Anderson and Gallows. If that's his big plan, then yes, they're better off going to NXT. I'm not even sure how aware Vince is of the broken stuff. I'm sure he's aware of it, but I mean, what does he really know what it is? I can't see a guy. How old is Vince now? 71? 72? I don't even know that Vince McMahon would get it. I don't even know that he would like it. Triple H, I'm sure, is well aware of it. He's the one supposedly who had the interest in bringing him back. Now, of course, you have the legal issue potentially of who owns the characters, but I mean, if they can work that out, they absolutely should continue doing that gimmick and just milk it for all it's worth. It would be crazy to not have them on your main roster because the Hardys are big names. The Hardys are still big names, and they've been away for WWE for so long. You've got two brands again now. Sending them to NXT almost seems like a waste. But if that's the only way to keep the whole broken Matt thing around, then I say do it. Plus, it'd be an easier schedule, right? I mean, there's probably a lot of benefits to them going to NXT when it comes to stuff like that. The trade-off, probably not as much money. You know, what's more important, I guess, right? What's more important when you have kids? Is it schedule? Or is it money? I mean, it's not like those guys are destitute. NXT is not going to pay them peanuts, but they ain't making the same money down there that they would be on the road working for Raw or SmackDown. Blake from Birmingham, Alabama. I have a question about what you said on last week's podcast. You said that you think Goldberg will still wrestle beyond WrestleMania. What do you think about Goldberg if he does not win the Universal title? Going to SmackDown and having matches with AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt, or even Baron Corbin. He's never been declared a Raw superstar. What do you think? I think it would make sense to keep Goldberg and Brock apart after WrestleMania. So if Brock's staying on Raw, then yeah, you could send Goldberg to SmackDown. Goldberg can become like what Brock is to Raw. Goldberg can become SmackDown's resident part-timer. Because I do think there's still value in keeping him around. Again, he's the biggest babyface they have. And you don't have to like Goldberg, but you're a fool if you don't admit that. He is the biggest babyface in the entire company. Now, again, he only makes appearances once every few weeks, so that helps. But, you know, he hasn't been exposed either. He's had one singles match so far that went 90 seconds, so it's hard to, you know what I mean? Like, when you're protected, when you're that protected, yeah, you're going to have a lot of value. But I think putting him on SmackDown would make sense. I'd be okay with that. I also think Goldberg and John Cena would be a big match, right? The Battle of the Superheroes for all the little kids. That could be interesting. The finish is, you know, them joining hands and singing the theme to Blue's Clues as rainbows fall from the sky. Ali from Dubai, after watching this week's SmackDown, an idea popped in my head. Why not, instead of AJ Styles, we put Luke Harper against Shane McMahon in a street fight at WrestleMania to play off the fact that Shane screwed Harper out of a title shot, which he clearly deserved after that battle royal, and the fact that he super kicked Shane during his match with AJ. This would help boost Harper into the upper mid card and give him some added credibility. I just really don't want to see Luke Harper selling for Shane McMahon's awful punches. I just, he's pretty bad. But if it got AJ into the main event of WrestleMania, then I wouldn't be against it. I mean, it would have to absolutely be a street fight because it can't just be a straight wrestling match. I don't know if Shane at, what is he now? 47? 48? I don't know if he's got another street fight in him like the one he had with Kurt Angle, but that was a hell of a match. And you're right, it would give Harper a meaningful match at WrestleMania instead of him just being in the, you know, the Andre Battle Royal. And I don't know that he's, you know, winning that. I mean, I guess maybe he could. I don't think he is. But he's got some momentum right now. I mean, Luke Harper in these last few weeks has been given the biggest push of his career. He's had the spotlight firmly on him. He's got people chanting Luke in the crowd. So he's got, you know, his fans out there. And I would hate to see that squander just because, well, he's just the pawn in the bigger story that we're trying to get to here. And so it doesn't matter. I don't want to see him be a pawn, you know, just do something with him. Don't just relegate him to the, you know, to the bottom. Just try to do something with him. So yeah, I'd be down for that. Reluctantly, but I would be down with that. Blake, you talked about the Muscle Buster a few episodes ago. We have not seen Joe. All right, I already talked about this earlier. I don't think the Muscle Buster is banned. Phased down, maybe, but I think soon enough we will see it. So that's my thoughts on that. St. Clair from Los Angeles. What current WWE tag team wrestler do you think has the most potential to break out as a single star? Kaz and Enzo, Shining Stars, New Day, Gallows and Anderson, The Vaudevillains, Breezango, American Alpha, The Usos, and The Ascension. He listed all of the teams. I'm going to say American Alpha. American Alpha. The buzz has kind of died down a little bit since they got called up from NXT. But my heart says that Chad Gable is that guy. My head says Jason Jordan just because, you know, look at him, right? It's just how it is, you know? Jack Swagger, here's the thing though. Jack Swagger, who I just talked about earlier and ranted on, right? He was even bigger, physically bigger than Jordan is. And he had the same, like, wrestling pedigree. And look what happened to him. So you know what? I shouldn't even say that. That look is not necessarily indicative of anything. You know, Swagger won a world title, but the guy was an afterthought. So who's to say, right? I think both of them, though. I think Jordan and Gable both have potential to be big single stars. And maybe some people can't get over, well, Gable's a small guy. You know, if you can't get over that, then I don't know what to tell you. The guy has a lot of talent. He was a lot of fun to watch in NXT. It's not just in the ring either. I mean, when I've seen him on promos and he just reminded me so much of Kurt Angle, and it wasn't just the whole Olympics thing. It was those promos. He reminded me so much of early comedy Kurt from 2000. He's got that in him. I'm not saying he's as good as Kurt. I'm just saying he's got that in him. So size shouldn't matter. If you put him out there and you let him do his thing, I think Gable will get over, and I hope he gets that chance. Jay from the UK, I decided to watch the infamous empty arena match between The Rock and Mankind for the first time recently. What rivalry today do you think can pull off an empty arena match as good as those two did? There was so much funny stuff during the match that I never understood why they did not do another one. I think that would be the perfect match for someone like Kevin Owens. Just when I got that question, I thought about it. I'm like, Kevin Owens is the first name that popped in my head. The way he likes to troll, the way he likes to trash talk during his matches, that to me would be the closest thing to what The Rock did with Mankind during their match. I love that part where they're in the office and Rock picks up the phone. You know, while he was kicking Foley's ass, he's answering phone calls. Like, there was so much good stuff in that match. So I think Owens could absolutely pull it off. Honestly, I know people are sick of seeing the match, but I think Sami Zayn would probably work in that sympathetic underdog babyface Mankind-esque role. And obviously you want there to be a real personal issue between the parties involved. Clearly he and Owens have had their issues before. I'm just trying to figure out, like, if not Sammy, who would match up well with Owens in a match like that? I mean, nobody I could think of on Raw. I mean, maybe Ambrose. You know, Ambrose, if you go to SmackDown, I'm thinking of the roster, Dean Ambrose, you know, and they've had a feud before. I mean, they had, what would they have, a last man standing match or something at the Rumble last year. So, Yeah, I mean, maybe Ambrose could be that guy. I don't know who else. I kind of think, honestly, a tag team empty arena match would be a lot of fun. That's something we've never seen before. I don't know that there's ever been a tag team empty arena match anywhere. Hey, you know, DIY and the Revival. Empty arena match. Full Sail University. Loser leaves NXT. There you go. There's one way to get the Revival up to the main roster. And they can brawl all over the school. Remember, Full Sail, it's a university. They can brawl all over the school. You can get real creative, I think, on campus with the places that you could go. We know those four have great wrestling matches. Nobody is denying that. But, you know, why not blow off a feud like that with a giant brawl? I love that idea. I would love to see it. Al from Boston, Massachusetts. I see guys like Braun Strowman and Samoa Joe who are both doing well. Don't get me wrong. But do you think Brock Lesnar permanently raised the bar on what it takes to be believably booked as a badass monster? Not to say it can't be done, but in the reality era, do you need real-life credentials of amateur wrestling or MMA titles and the like? Or do you think it's a necessity to have truly lived a part, or live the part, he says, to succeed in the role? Strowman and Joe are great, but next to Lesnar, even now, I still say no contest. P.S., can someone please thumb Sam Roberts in the eye and get you on the pre-show panels instead? Now, come on now. I would never do such a thing to Sam. I would pay somebody else to thumb him in the eye. I mean, come on. I learned from Bobby Heenan all those years as a kid. That's how you do it. You pay somebody else to do the job for you. No, I don't think you have to have an actual fight background to be a believable big man. You need to be big and scary looking. And not have two left feet, right? That's why Giant Gonzalez and the Great Khali were never that successful, right? I mean, they put the world title on Khali, which, don't even bring that up to Batista. It still makes him want to vomit whenever somebody mentions that to him. But as many years as Khali spent on that roster, so I guess in that respect, he had a successful run. But as long as he was there, he was never as successful as Vince McMahon, I'm sure, would have liked for him to be. But he couldn't do anything. The guy could not do anything. He was terrible. Giant Gonzalez, he was terrible. Vladimir Kozlov, he turned into a great comedy character. He found his niche with Santino. But in the ring, he was the shits. If you're big, you've already won half of the battle. All you need to be is just competent in the role. And if they give you the big push, you'll probably do well. I mean, sometimes the fans just reject you. But when WWE does things right, the people buy into it. They've done just about everything right so far with Braun Strowman. Okay, we'll see if that statement comes back to bite me on the ass after the pay-per-view tonight. But they've booked him like an absolute unstoppable monster. And he's gotten a lot better. Strowman has noticeably improved. And that's why he's doing so well. And he didn't have to win a title in the UFC for me to buy into the fact that this guy could rip my head off and shit down my neck if he wanted to. Luis from El Paso, Texas. I can't help but notice that you mentioned the 30th anniversary of Hulk Hogan slamming Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 3. But there's another anniversary this year that seems to be overlooked, and that is the 20th anniversary of the Bret Hart-Steve Austin double turn at WrestleMania 13. Do you think there is the possibility we see both of them doing an appearance at WrestleMania 33? I hope so. It'd be nice to get the two of them back together. You know what? I think actually if they're smart, they'll get the two of them together for a panel at, like Access or something, or do like a network special. And, you know, so they could sell more tickets in Orlando to people. I'm sure people would snatch those tickets up, as if there isn't enough going on that weekend. And, you know, maybe bring in Jim Ross as a one shot, pay him to be the host. He can host it, right? I think people would pay to see that. Rich from New Jersey, is it true that WWE stars have to pay for their own health insurance and must carry it or be suspended? If so, do you think that makes sense? To my knowledge, I don't know about suspended, but to my knowledge, that is true. They tell you, you must get your own health insurance, and I guess or else you're not allowed to perform. What would make sense is if they were considered employees and not independent contractors. And they were provided some kind of employee-based health insurance. But that's not how the wrestling business works. I mean, if you're a front office employee, WWE, I can tell you this, WWE to its employees, they have a great benefits package. So their benefits package when it comes to the health insurance and 401k and all that kind of stuff is very, very good. and very, very competitive. With the wrestlers, they're not employees, and so they don't get that same benefit. Ken from Cincinnati, during an interview with Ken Anderson that I watched on YouTube, I heard a story that really sickened me. I don't remember what arena it was, but Anderson told a story about a mentally handicapped man who worked for the arena. And when the wrestlers would come to this building, they would stick him up, in Anderson's words, with anabolic steroids. Despite the fact that it's illegal, it also angers me that people would be that low class. I may not be an expert on steroid use, but if they injected that poor guy with enough of the drug, he very well could have died. We've also heard about wrestlers defecating in sandwiches and gym bags. Have wrestlers always been on the lower moralistic side? Wow. Way to paint with a broad brush there. Yeah, I would not do that. And I would not say that most wrestlers are, what was the subject line of the email was, why are all wrestlers so low class? I mean, come on. That's a bullshit statement. You don't believe that. It's not true. I liken it. Look, what you just said, I find appalling. I've never heard that story before. So if anybody can find me the clip of that Ken Anderson shoot, I'd love to listen to it in his own words. But I just liken it to, you know, hazing and all the bullshit that goes on probably in any sport. Baseball, football locker rooms. There's a lot of really bad stuff that happens. And I don't think wrestling is any different. I think wrestling has had its share of awful characters over the years. Dynamite Kid is legendary for the ribs he would pull on people. But the Dynamite Kid was an awful human being who did awful things to people because he was an awful human being. And it's funny, too, because there's actually a question in the mailbag here I'm going to get to a little bit later about Bob Sweetan, as you know, just passed away. And there's another one. Another terrible, awful human being. There are people in the wrestling business who are bad people. But to paint with a broad brush and, oh, they're all low class, low brow, like scumbags. No, they're not. You just hear about that stuff because that's what sells. Ken Anderson is doing a shoot interview talking about guys shooting up some handicapped dude with a steroid needle because that's a story that people are going to be interested in hearing about. That's what sells. That's what gets clicks and views. Nobody wants to watch or listen to a shoot interview of somebody for 2 hours telling nothing but nice stories about people. I mean, I think it would be kind of refreshing, actually. And I will say, actually, Demolition. Demolition did a 2 hour long or 3 hour long shoot interview on the Great North Wrestling Channel, which, by the way, shout out to them. They've got some great free long shoot interviews up on that channel. That's the one that's run by, oh my goodness, his name just popped out of my head, Hannibal. But Demolition actually did a shoot not too long ago that I watched, and they were actually overwhelmingly positive about most of the stuff they were talking about, and it was kind of refreshing. So I personally wouldn't mind hearing from guys, even if it was just stories about, you know, funny stories. Like, it doesn't have to be salacious shit that you talk about, but those are the stories you hear about. What you don't hear about are all the normal people. And believe me, there are a lot of normal, perfectly upstanding citizens who work in pro wrestling. I would not paint with a broad brush and say, oh, they're all low class, they're all scumbags. I think the same shit happens in baseball, the same shit happens in football, the same shit happens in the music industry, in the entertainment industry. Wrestling is no different in that respect. So again, let's not generalize here. Jordan from Adelaide, Australia. Why did they have a triple threat match for the World Heavyweight Championship with Big Show at WrestleMania 25 instead of just having a singles match between John Cena and Edge, which would have been fitting for their rivalry over the years? Well, because Big Show needed something to do. Simple as that. Wasn't Big Show caught on camera like smooching with Vicky Guerrero in one segment on the TV? I vaguely remember this. There was like a period where he was working for her, or he was aligned with her. I think this would have been when she was the GM on SmackDown. Well, this would have been when she was the GM on SmackDown. So maybe that's how they tied him in with getting a championship match. I don't remember all the details, but obviously they had no better plans for him, and so they put him in there. Speaking of that match, Ken from Los Angeles. I recently rewatched WrestleMania 25 and was satisfied with the show. Over the years, I've heard and seen a lot of people crap on this particular WrestleMania. I know Triple H versus Randy Orton disappointed as a main event, but we got Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, and the rest of the card was pretty good. Why do people like to crap on this show, and what is your opinion of it? People crap on it because it really wasn't very good. I'm sorry, dude, but it really wasn't. Not for a WrestleMania, anyway. For the same way that WrestleMania 13 is not considered a good show, just because it had Bret Hart against Steve Austin, which is probably, you know, it's right up there. It fights with Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, I think, for a lot of people, as the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. There's a reason for that, because it's a legendary match. But that match alone did not make WrestleMania 13. Like, nobody looks back on WrestleMania 13 and says, man, what a great show. I don't know anybody who says that about WrestleMania 13. And it's a subjective thing. Maybe there are people out there who have, like, a fondness for it because they were a kid, and so they had a lot of fun. They had Undertaker and Sid. Oh, my God, these two big monsters. Maybe there are people who actually exist out there who thought that was a great show. Most people don't. And so that one match, it may have saved the show, but that alone doesn't make the show great. Now, this show was not as bad as WrestleMania 13. I'm not trying to say that. Money in the Bank's always a fun train wreck. They had a Money in the Bank ladder match. Obviously, Undertaker and Shawn, that's my favorite WrestleMania match. From what I can remember, Cena, Edge, and Big Show, the triple threat, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't really particularly memorable. It should have been just Cena and Edge. I mean, you're right. That's the match it should have been. And I guess I'm saying that in reference to the person who wrote in before you who kind of pitched that idea. I agree with that person. It should have been a singles match. And really, I mean, what else was there on that WrestleMania show? You had Jericho against the Legends. You had Mysterio beating JBL in 20 seconds. I hated Triple H and Randy Orton. I mean, a lot of times you live and die by the main events on those shows. And honestly, had they taken the Jericho-Ricky Steamboat match, they had a singles match the very next month. It might have been Backlash, whatever that pay-per-view was. If you take that match and you put that on the WrestleMania card, and I'm trying to think that Backlash show that came, was that the one where they did Edge and Cena in a Last Man Standing? I think it was. I think they had a Last Man Standing match. I always think of their TLC match in Toronto, but I'm pretty sure they did a Last Man Standing match on that very next pay-per-view. If you take that match and the Steamboat Jericho singles match and you put them on the WrestleMania card, that changes the whole dynamic of the card. That, coupled with the Undertaker-Shawn match, that's a very good WrestleMania right there. Because Jericho and Steamboat, when they went one-on-one, they had a really good match. So you take those two matches, you put those matches on the WrestleMania card, and you end, instead of ending with Triple H and Orton, you end with Undertaker and Shawn. I mean, you've got a completely different WrestleMania right there. And I guarantee you, people look back on that WrestleMania as one of the better WrestleManias of all time. I mean, it's just, you make a few changes here and there, and it's amazing the difference that it can make. Jason in Changchun, China. That's, I guess, a real place. I've never heard of that before. The argument against turning John Cena heel usually includes people pointing to Steve Austin turning heel and claims that it drove off fans. However, I hardly ever hear anyone argue that the death of WCW was also a huge factor in turning people away. Even Matt Hardy in a shoot interview felt the alliance angle confused the audience because they essentially turned the whole roster babyface. Do you think it was Austin's heel turn, the end of WCW, or just the overall dramatic shift across the board in wrestling that turned away fans? First of all, I have said many times on this show before that the death of WCW is the number one reason why fans left and never came back. I don't know where you're getting this idea that nobody ever talks about the death of... I mean, a lot of people talk about that, and I'm one of them, and I'm pretty sure most people would agree, but, you know, maybe they don't. I know that I've said it on this show before. The death of WCW may have put that company out of its misery, but it did long-lasting damage to the wrestling business that it's never fully recovered from. That is a fact. Steve Austin turning heel and shaking hands with Vince McMahon, that definitely had an impact. That's when ratings and such had begun a very slow decline. But of the two, the death of WCW was far worse. Far worse. See, here's the thing. A healthy WCW, or a relaunched WCW, might have kept some of those fans from leaving. We'll never know. Instead, some of them may have stuck around at first, didn't like what they saw, and they bolted. And WWE has spent the better part now of 15 or 16 years trying to get those people back, and it just hasn't worked. The lapsed fans, as they call them, they're always trying to get those fans back, and it never works. But the death of WCW was the biggest reason why. It really set the business back. And so you can have a healthy wrestling business, and WWE is making money hand over fist and all that, but it's not like it's the dark days of the mid-90s or anything like that, but there is a big portion of the audience that was there, that went away, and that never came back. And they haven't really grown their audience to make up for those fans either. Sepia from Poughkeepsie, New York. I recently read an ESPN article on Bray Wyatt's recent world title win at Elimination Chamber. After the event, he was interviewed, and when reflecting on the win, he said, "To be honest with you, I don't think I've come to grips with this yet." I liken his statement to Seth Rollins' celebration after pinning Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 31 and feel it was totally genuine, along with Flair's win over Vader at Starrcade 93 and Shawn Michaels' win over Bret Hart in 1996. Although pro wrestling is a work, I wanted to ask you which championship victory responses by wrestlers looked and felt like a shoot. I mean, you know, there were a lot of them in the NWA. That epic scene of like Dusty Rhodes winning the championship and everybody jumping up and down and putting him on their shoulders and all that kind of stuff. Ric Flair had the same thing, like when he won it from Harley Race at the first Starrcade. In WWE, if we're going to talk about WWE, I gotta go with He Who Shall Not Be Named. I gotta go with Chris Benoit at WrestleMania 20. I mean, the guy was bawling his eyes out when he won that championship, and the same thing with Eddie Guerrero the month before. When Eddie beat Brock for the title and they were in San Francisco, I think. Big Latin population there. Eddie's mother's in the crowd. His brothers are in the crowd. He dives into the fans. That was completely genuine. Are you kidding me? You don't think that guy was emotional? Of course. So Benoit and Eddie are actually two of the first names that come to mind. I'll throw Bayley's win in there from TakeOver in Brooklyn when she won the NXT title from Sasha Banks. And she was in tears, and I think those are some of the ones that stand out to me when I think of like a genuine, real happy, overwhelmed reaction to winning a champion. I'm sure you guys can suggest a few more. Those are the ones that jump out at me. Joe from Durham, North Carolina. What are your thoughts on the passing of Bob Sweetan? I don't recall if you mentioned it on your show. No, I didn't mention it because I never talked about him. He was another one who died this year. I don't know how many wrestlers that makes so far, probably like 6 or 7 who have died this year so far. I don't have a lot to say about the guy. He was a piece of garbage. He was a piece of garbage by all accounts. In fact, I believe that's the exact word that Jim Duggan used in his book to describe him. And Hacksaw, look, I've not met Hacksaw Jim Duggan, but I've seen enough of him and I know people who have met him at these conventions and all that. Hacksaw Jim Duggan just is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And if he calls you a piece of garbage, then you're probably a piece of garbage. You're probably not somebody that I would want to hang around. But the guy, he sexually molested his own daughter, okay? I think the less said about him, the better. Connor from Indianapolis. If you were signed to a wrestling contract at any point in time from any era to any company, where would you want to go? You would be the face of said company. You'd have creative control over your character, so you'd be able to do whatever you want. Where would you want to be? I don't know that anybody had more fun than Steve Austin did in the Attitude Era, driving Zambonis and beer trucks in all those buildings and beating up his boss. That seems like it would be a lot of fun. But you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say that if I could be the baby face, if I could be the main face of Jim Crockett Promotions at its peak in the mid to late 80s and be like in a War Games match in front of those fans, I would not be surprised if half those people thought wrestling was still real. That's how much those people were into what they saw. That's how much those people bought into wrestling back then. You don't have that today. You just don't. It's done. It's gone. I would want to be in a War Games match, like blood everywhere, getting into the cage, just running wild with the crowd going crazy, Jim Ross calling the match. I mean, those guys were like real life superheroes back then. People believed. I would love to be part of that. I really would. I would love to be part of that whole thing. Plus, I'd get to wrestle Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen. So, you know, come on. How cool would that be? Wrestling those guys at their peak in front of those crowds? That's what I would go with. John from California has a buy or sell. We have 3 of them, so we'll do his first. Owen Hart, or the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith. Both men were similar in many ways. Both are former tag team champions, also held the Intercontinental and European titles, and never held the WWE Championship. They also had a memorable SummerSlam match each. Bulldog with Brett, Owen with Brett. Brett seems to be the common denominator here. What are your thoughts? That's a tough one because those are two very talented guys. But I'm going to buy on Owen Hart. I'm going to buy on Owen. I'm going to sell on Davey Boy. I think that Owen, just as overall as a performer, was better. Not that Bulldog didn't have some good matches, but I think Owen had more, you know, good matches. He was more, you know, capable in the ring, but also just his whole persona, that whole Owen Hart, King of Hearts. And even later on when he joined the Nation, beat up, you know, who was it, Jason Sensation, and was doing that stuff. I just think overall as a performer, in terms of just being entertaining, I would go with Owen Hart. But it's close. Colin from Cali, buy or sell on which one of Charles Wright's wrestling personas you prefer? Papa Shango, Kama Mustafa, or The Godfather? Papa Shango, I think, was kind of, maybe not underrated, maybe underappreciated in a way. Like, you know, when you're younger, I was already old enough where it's not like he really scared me. I thought some of it was campy, you know, having the black ooze come from the Ultimate Warrior's head and making him vomit. Boy, he really seemed to go after the Ultimate Warrior, didn't he? And believe it or not, I don't know how many people know this, but there was a period in the late 90s during the Attitude Era when they were bringing him back. He was going to come back as Papa Shango, and he ended up coming back, I think, as the Godfather. But there was talk about him coming back in as Papa Shango. Now imagine Papa Shango coming in like 1998. I don't know how that would have gone. It might have worked, but I don't think he's complaining about how things turned out. I'm going to buy on the Godfather and sell on the rest. I mean, Kama, who gives a shit? But I'm going to buy on the Godfather. Godfather was so fun. He was just so much fun to watch. You know, he would come out, he would do his spiel. Everybody would do it with him, and it was a lot of fun. So of the three, I think the most fun was The Godfather. So that's why I'm going to buy on that one. And finally here, Garrett from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Buy or sell on the three faces of Foley: Mankind, Dude Love, or Cactus Jack? Oh, I'm buying on Mankind. I am 100% all in on Mankind. Sell on the rest. I was a big, big Mankind fan. Especially the early incarnation of Mankind, 96, when he first came in, and was a lot darker than he would become, or that he would be later on. Not that I hated the, some of the comedy stuff he did. That's a big part of why I like Mankind so much. I love that early iteration of the character that was so evil and kind of deranged, but even when he went over to the comedy side, and he was doing the Rock and Sock stuff, and Mr. Socko, and the segment with Vince in the hospital, like, he was very entertaining, and I just really love that character. Cactus Jack, I know if you're an ECW fan, it's probably sacrilege. How could you vote against Cactus Jack? But I don't know, Cactus Jack was okay, you know, I mean, whatever. Dude Love was a waste. So yeah, I like Mankind. I just like the story. I like that character. I like the mask. I miss the Mankind mask. I'm sure he doesn't like, you know, he doesn't miss wearing it. He used to talk about how much it stunk. But I miss the Mankind character. Maybe one week as the GM, he could be the GM as Mankind for the night. This week in Sound Off History, as I record episode 485 here on our March to 500, we go all the way back in our time machine to episode 85 from October 15th, 2009, where I talked about the death of Captain Lou Albano. Also talked about Melina traded from SmackDown to Raw, beating Jillian Hall to win the Divas title in a match where they had only one move that they had to do. And they screwed it up. One move. I was quite animated on that podcast about that. But to her credit, Melina immediately busted out a code red to win the championship. So she did. She was able to quickly adjust, but it was still no less embarrassing. Episode 185 from October 16th, 2011. Hulk Hogan buries Bobby Roode. I talked about an impressive Ring of Honor television debut for some guy named Tommaso Ciampa. And I reviewed Paul Bearer's Hits from the Crypt from WWE Classics. What a coincidence. I just got done talking about how I wish they would add old Coliseum video releases to the network, and here I'm reviewing an old Coliseum video release. Episode 285 from July 28th, 2013, discussing TNA's embarrassing house show disaster, the hashtag Ask Dixie debacle, and the release of Jesse Sorensen, including a small defense, just a small one, of Dixie Carter. Talked about an ugly Miz TV segment that not even Brie Bella's nipple could save, and examining Raw's move to 3 hours 1 year later. My God, it's been 5 years of this shit now. And episode 385 from May 31st, 2015 led with what was thought to be potentially a bombshell story with Ring of Honor moving to Destination America. And it did not turn out to be quite as big of a bombshell as it looked like at that time. Memories also of the soon-to-be-shuttered Nassau Coliseum here in New York, which finally reopens this April, by the way. And I've been asked about this before. I have been asked about my rant on the Fabulous Moolah. Well, this is the episode where I talk about the Fabulous Moolah and her past, and why she did more harm than good to women's wrestling. And frankly, talk about the question that we had in the mailbag earlier, just was not a very good human being. There are, unfortunately, people like that in the wrestling business. So that's on episode 385. You can stream or download past episodes of the podcast from thesolomonster.com. You can go to iTunes. You can find most of them there. You can find the very first 10 episodes of The Sound Off from 2007 into the beginning of 08. They're up on our YouTube channel. Just scroll back in the videos. I uploaded them many, many, many months ago. But if you want to hear how awful I sounded back then in my early days, I guess before my balls dropped, it sounds like. It's just, I cringe sometimes. I go back and listen to that. I can't even listen. So if you want to hear it and make fun of me, you can do so on the YouTube channel. Don't forget, go to the YouTube channel anyway, because I got a great hour plus long, like a 68-minute interview that I did with Dave Lagana. Dave Lagana, here's a guy who, you know, knows where the bodies are buried, okay? He was a writer and a producer for WWE, TNA, ROH. He worked with all the big names and has a lot of fun stories to tell. And we get even beyond the questions of, hey, you know, what was going on when John Cena was coming up and doing the battle raps? And hey, what happened when Tim White was committing suicide in those skits? Like, but beyond that, we get into, you know, the questions about writers in wrestling, which I think is a very interesting subject, coming from somebody who spent, you know, in WWE alone, he spent 8 years, or I'm sorry, 6 years. In TNA, he spent 5 years up until this past November. So, you know, you get the perspective from somebody who was in the trenches. And then we talk about his relationship with Billy Corgan. We talk about their 30-day series on YouTube. It's on the Smashing Pumpkins YouTube channel. It's a very interesting project. I've watched all of the videos. It's a lot of fun. So we get into all that stuff. So go on there. Leave comments, like the video, tweet me and Billy, or not Bill, well, you could tweet Billy, I guess, but you could tweet Dave, at Lagana is his handle. Let him know what you thought of the interview. He's very interactive. He will respond to you if you tweet him, but definitely check that out. Don't forget also, take advantage of the Audible offer. This is pretty cool, and I'm going to remind you guys of this over the next several weeks, but you can use our Audible link right now to pre-order your free copy of the new AJ Lee book. The book does not come out until April 4, but it is narrated. The audiobook is narrated by AJ herself. Supposedly, there's a lot of very interesting stuff in that book. And if you want to get the book in audio format, you can get it for free. Because these brand new books come out, and you know they can cost some money. It doesn't have to cost you anything. You can pre-order it right now. You don't have to wait until April. audibletrial.com/solomonster. Punch that link in, sign up, you get a 30-day trial, you can pre-order the book, you can get the book, it costs you nothing, even if you cancel the trial. So take advantage of that, get the AJ Lee book. I think it's listed on there under her real name, April Mendez Brooks. If you type that in or type in the name of the book, it'll come right up. But definitely take advantage of that. Audible is offering it to listeners of this podcast. We will be back next weekend with episode 486 of The Sound Off. And why not? Because I haven't missed a week in, I think in May. I'm pretty sure at the end of May, if I can make it that far, it will be 7 years since the last week that I missed a show. I mean, there have been weeks where, like when I go to Mania and stuff, or I'm on vacation, where I may do the show a few days early or have an abbreviated show or something. But I've always made sure every single week a show gets done, and I have not missed one in almost 7 years. I'm proud of that. I'm actually really proud of that. Of course, now that I said that, watch, I'll get hit by the plague next week, and I'll be laid up in bed for 2 weeks. But there will be an episode, as always, next week, and that'll be number 486. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and hopefully you're a lot warmer than I am right now because I have no heat. And we'll see you back here for a brand new podcast next week. And also, don't forget, I'll be doing a Fastlane review, yet another reason to go subscribe to the YouTube channel. So check that out tonight, and we'll see you next time. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay. That's racist.
Well, no, it's not. That's just
racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, that those are the racists.
Solomonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.